The Riff's Phone-In Talk Show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome. A pleasure to be here every Sunday with you folks. And, it's a talk show, so we need your participation at 313-298-WRIF. And welcome, of course, to the WRIF listening audience in Michigan, Ontario, and Northern Ohio. And, of course, to everyone listening around the world at WRIF.com or radiopower.org. Or if you're listening to the iPod broadcast, or to the radiopower.org rebroadcast tomorrow, or who am I leaving out? Oh, yeah, I can't forget whiterosesociety.org, who will be archiving the show. And you can go back and get years of shows, actually, and including the old Peter Werby show. I'll tell you why I was thinking about that. I used to do that as a syndicated talk show. And I was listening tonight to some old tapes when I did it with Jalene Jordan, who used to be a jock here on WRIF in Detroit. And then we did this show together, kind of co-host. I mean, it was the Peter Werby show, but it was, you know, Peter and Jalene. And I was thinking, I don't know why this has stuck with me, but someone was saying, remember there was email. That's what they call them. CallTalkYes@Yahoo.com, by the way. You can get a hold of me that way. CallTalkYes@Yahoo.com. And they said, you must have no fun. And I was thinking, I am a lot grimmer on this program than when I was doing it with Jalene. Because we used to, we talked about all the serious subjects, because that's what these shows are all about. And yet we could goof off some. I don't know how to goof off by myself, I guess, or something like that. I actually had some good times, saw some nice performances over the week, over last week. One of them was at the Century Theater. That's at the Gem Theater. Inside, you know, that building that they moved, they actually, what were they doing? I guess it was, they don't call it Tiger Stadium anymore. What the hell do they call it? Comerica Park, right. In the seventh inning, they sing God Bless Comerica. That's what I've been told. Yeah, I'm pretty terrible. I hope this doesn't get me in trouble. But I kind of swore I was never going to go to the new stadium. I mean, it just totally PO'd me that they didn't take the advice of the Tiger Stadium fan club and redo this historic building that had almost been played in three centuries. In other words, it was open or on that piece of property where Tiger Stadium still is. In 1898, so they played all through the 20th century, and the last game was in 1999, which I was at. And they could have spent a whole lot less and had this incredible stadium where so many of us were taken there by our fathers, and our fathers were taken there by our grandfathers, and Ty Cobb, and Babe Ruth, and Lou Gehrig, and Ted Williams, and Stan Musial, and all the greats of baseball played. So I swore that I was never going to go to the new one. And I actually, this sounds familiar. Well, if I'm repeating myself, what the hell? That somebody I know that works for the Illich organization took me of a tour of it, and I thought, well, that's nice. Yeah. Didn't have the memories. I know they had obstructed views, but man, you were close to the field. You ever sit like in the Tiger's Den or anything like that, or a little off to the right? Boy, you could, you were right there. Anyway. Be that what it may. Probably got myself in trouble with the, don't those folks advertise on WRIF? Anyway, we my wife and I, my nameless wife, who by her request remains nameless, we left our nameless dog at home. Our dog, I won't even tell you what gender it is, but my wife also insists that our dog remain nameless as well. All right, we left nameless dog at home, and nameless wife and I went down to the Century Theater, which is located inside the Gem Theater Entertainment Facility. That's how I got on that, and which had been moved to make room for Tiger Stadium. Anyways, we saw Deceptions to the Rule, and it's kind of a send-up of old 40s detective movies. What they call film noir, right? So that was, and it's a comedy. So it's pretty funny. Well done. Actually, real good stuff. And it's going to continue on through November 13th. And then, just a few blocks away, Saturday night it was, let me be straight about that, I saw the Detroit Opera Theater production of Norma. That sounds almost too like a film noir. Norma, you know, like Stella. Remember that old 40s film? Or you may or may not. It was a great film, Stella. Anyways, Norma, though, was written in 1831 by an Italian opera composer named Bellini. And it just absolutely magnificent. And people say, opera. I don't understand it. Some people say, well, I can put up with a little concert music, a little classical music, but opera. I don't get that, because you have the Detroit Opera Theater Orchestra, which was just absolutely fabulous. I went there. I took a friend of ours. It was her birthday, and she has even played with the symphony there, and she said they were flawless. I mean, they sounded great to me, but you know, I don't have a professional ear like her. And the singing was absolutely spectacular. And these stories, of course, I mean, they're romantic and they're corny, but the scope of them and the tragedies, and this is about, it's set in France in 50 BC, and the Druids are like working up a revolt against the occupiers, the Roman. I don't think the Detroit Opera Theater had any intention of, political analogies here or anything like that. But anyways, it was great, and it's gonna play this coming Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. You can check it out. And they have coming La Boheme and Aida. So they have the great ones there. And the Michigan Opera Theater, and I know some of you are thinking, wait a minute, man, isn't this a rock and roll station? Aren't you a rocker? What's up? Well, the rockers went to the opera back then, because this stuff was way over the top then, and in many ways still is. I mean, in a good way. I like that. So, that all said, I guess so I prove I had fun, so I can go back to being talking about the grim state of things. And, you know, that is strange how we can both be very fearful about today, maybe even more fearful about tomorrow, or concerned, however you want to conceive of it, and still have some joy. I think I have used, talking about repeating myself, I think I have used this analogy before, and this is probably true almost in every war zone. When the Serbs were bombarding, it's out of my head right now, the city, in Bosnia, it was under constant bombardment, but as soon as the bombardment would stop for a while, people would be out in the streets immediately and, going to the cafes and what have you. 313-298-WRIF. Well, a few topics. I mean, things I don't know. I was going to say this is good, but things are getting worse and worse for the Bush gang, aren't they? But, of course, that means they're getting worse and worse for us. Bush now is on the Bring Back the Fear tour. I don't know if you've heard any of his statements lately, but it's more terrorism and face this worldwide threat. You didn't know that. We just thought that these terrorists were kind of coordinated, not even real coordinated. Like the Bali bombing was done by people that had no connection to Al-Qaeda. They were freelancing. And that, in many ways, should be our biggest fear. But now we're actually facing this worldwide threat comparable to communism and Nazism. And who knows where this will all strike next, right? We'll talk about that as well. Karl Rove, advisor to Bush, may be frog-marched out of the White House in handcuffs tomorrow or the next day when this grand jury brings in indictments for who leaked the CIA agent's name. If you don't know about, either you know about this, and I don't want to go into all the details, it's too complex, but it was another, Bush was going to punish his enemies, or someone up in the Bush administration was. So all of that as well. Rove was called to his fourth grand jury appearance, and he had discrepancies in his testimony, and they told him, we can't guarantee that you will not be indicted. How about this? Speaking about the Bushman. Actually, Bushmen, those people, they have actually a better name than that, but the Bushmen in Africa, they're pretty cool. They got a real cool culture and all that. All right. Margaret, I can't believe this is Margaret. Margaret says, she looked, I don't know, maybe she heard the show. Maybe she looked at my website, which is peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com. And she says, I'll tell you, this is Margaret. And although it's the email address, not signed. And the person writes, I hope you burn in hell, you effing traitor. except female doesn't say effing. I hope you burn in hell, you effing traitor. So I wrote, are you Margaret? I can't believe it. Only an enraged male could write this below. I'll read your message tonight on my show and comment on it. Try an anger management course. Hey, by the way, only 28% of Americans agree with you. That's what's pretty crazy. So most of what I have on my website, I would say 90% of what I have on my website is from mainstream sources. So you become a traitor by putting out there what's in the Jacksonville paper and Monterey, California paper and the Los Angeles Times and the Houston paper. I mean, this is very strange, but it gives you an idea about these right-wing wackos that somehow have managed to puncture the protective device that always kept these people out of the mainstream. I mean, they were always here, these sort of fascistic personalities, these far right-wing religious people and all that. They were kept out of the mainstream because people knew, on one hand, that they didn't represent very many people. And secondly, they really kind of have a screw loose. So as long as they just sort of gravitated in their own little world, and you could kind of deal with them when they hurt people on different levels, politically, sometimes even physically, you had to deal with them. But now they're almost mainstream. And a lot of these folks don't realize. They don't realize how far down the drain they've gone. So even the backbone, the core groups backing Bush, evangelicals, Republican women, and Southerners have suddenly think that the nation is headed in the wrong direction. They're disappointed with Bush's performance, according to this latest AP poll. Only 28% say the country is headed in the right direction. 66% of us say it's on the wrong track. So that's two-thirds. Imagine two-thirds of the people in your life didn't like you. Two-thirds of your workmates didn't like you. Two-thirds of your family didn't like you. That'd be pretty bad. 28%. I mean, I'm actually curious to hear from you 28% if anybody wants to call on that. 313-298-WRIF. I'd really like to hear, not exactly that we're headed in the right direction, but what direction are we headed in? I don't see, that's, I think, the whole problem. We are headed nowhere. We're headed in a downward spiral. And like I said, you can go to a concert, rock or opera. You can have a nice time with your family and friends. Neither night did we go out after, but usually we go out after. And people are having a grand time and don't seem really miserable. What else do I have here? Richard Solinsky, a Republican from Orland Park, Illinois, says, I approve what the president is doing, but it's a mixed decision. We should get out of Iraq, says this Republican. It seems like there's no light at the end of the tunnel. I guess not. 37% of Americans approve of Bush's handling of Iraq. So overall, he's got 9% more on that. But 62% don't approve of it at all. And he's hauling out the 9-1-1 BS again, this is all connected. This is all connected. And it's connected in a very, very, on one hand, bizarre, but on another hand, kind of frightening basis. Let me see if I can lay that out to you. If you want, there's a couple of lines open still. People calling in already, and we will get to them real quickly. And if you're just joining us, I'm Peter Werby. This is the Night Call Show, and our phone number 313-298-WRIF. Oddly enough, I'm going to kind of just start about 2 or 3 minutes conversation with a quote from 1803 from James Madison, one of the founding fathers. And you remember there were 10 amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. And in the first one, it said that that Congress shall make no law establishing religion. Congress shall make no prohibit the exercise thereof. So, in other words, they wanted to keep the country religiously neutral. Now, these evangelicals say that people like myself and others, who I guess you'd say are true constitutionalists, want to drive God from the public square. That's one of their contentions. that people, I mean, here they got these organizations, they've got this religious nutball in the White House. They got churches everywhere. They're worth billions of dollars. I mean, one church, Catholic Church, is worth billions. And they're always, like, on the defensive. We're the victims. We're being hurt by people that say, you know, maybe the Constitution of the United States, the foundation document of this nation, makes some sense. And that God shouldn't be in the public square. God should not be in the public square. God should be where? Well, for those of you who believe and those of you who want to worship, first and foremost, in your head, in your brain, in your ideas, driving your ethics, whatever, making you more comfortable with the human condition, whatever. But it doesn't belong in the public square. Then there's some other places outside of your head, and those are these places specifically set up for worship. They're called churches, they're called mosques, they're called synagogues, they're called temples, and they probably have other names as well. So let's go back to James Madison in his 1803 quote. This is extraordinarily important. This is what James Madison says, and here's the quote. The purpose of separation of church and state. People say, oh, you know, it never says that in the Constitution. No, but this was not a phrase that was begun in, like, the 1950s or something like this. This was James Madison's words in 1803. The purpose of separation of church and state is to keep forever from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe with blood for centuries. That's what happens when you have God in the public square. The ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe with blood for centuries. And you say, well, people aren't doing that here. It's not Sunnis versus Shia. It's not Catholics versus Protestants like in in Northern Ireland. It's not Hindus versus Muslims like in India and Pakistan and places like that. No, but there is this ceaseless strife once we allow these religious crackpots into the public square. And we got to keep them out because they cause nothing but problems. There is no attempt to stop the free. All of a sudden, I forgot the words. I had it from the Constitution. Let me see. It should be no establishment of religion or the practice of or whatever. So in other words, the government. We don't want the government saying you can't practice religion. We don't want any. Although now, of course, under Bushko, under this far right-wing religious government, this theocracy that has been placed upon the secular nation, now that institutions like the Salvation Army can take our tax dollars and refuse to hire people that they don't think are religious enough. I mean, they're not going to hire a Muslim or a Jew or a Buddhist or a Hindu or anything like that. They can do that. This religious discrimination is now legal in the United States. That's the kind of atmosphere that we're living in. But worst of all, we're being ruled by a religious nut who thinks God speaks directly to him. I'm talking about George W. Bush. If these reports are accurate and they are all over, you know, you say the internet, the reports are in the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, and other sources. Now, here's the deal. Well, first off, many people, I don't know if you speak to God. If someone says, I speak to God, I'm going to go, oh, really? That's interesting. You beseech or pray, and God may hear your prayers. You know, someone call in and tell me if I've got this wrong. I've never done anything like this. 313-298-WRIF. But one prays to God, but one doesn't speak directly to God. Hi, I'm Jim. God, hey, man, stop creating new species to take the place of the ones we are destroying. I got something to say. You know, I want to win the lottery or whatever. Pray for my sick mother. But if God speaks to you, anyone who says God speaks to me directly, well, it's white coat, men in white coat times, isn't it? It's time to get the men in the white coats. Well, here, this is directly from the BBC. God told me to invade Iraq, Bush tells Palestinian ministers. President George W. Bush told Palestinian ministers that God had told him to invade Afghanistan and Iraq and create a Palestinian state. That's according to a new BBC series. In Elusive Peace, Israel and the Arabs, it's a major three-part series on BBC Two. And I don't know if you can get this, but it's going to be, Monday the 17th, Monday the 20th. Oh, it's going to be tomorrow night, too. 9 p.m., if anybody's listening in London. And actually, I know a couple of you are. And Monday the 10th, Monday the 17th, Monday the 24th, Abu Mazen, the Palestinian prime minister, and Nabil Shath, his foreign minister, described their first meeting with President Bush in June 2003. Nabil Shath says, quote, President Bush said to all of us, I'm driven with a mission from God. God would tell me, George, go and fight those terrorists in Afghanistan. And I did. And then God would tell me, George, go and end the tyranny in Iraq. And I did. And now again, I feel God's words coming to me. Go get the Palestinians their state and get the Israelis their security and get peace in the Middle East. And by God, I'm going to do it. Abu Mazen was at the same meeting and recounts how President Bush told him, I have a moral and religious obligation, so I will get you a Palestinian state. Now, I have to say, although Bush has not denied this, Scott McClellan, who's a known liar, who's told any number of fabrications toward, that's a presidential spokesperson, to the press, he says these words were never uttered. But this is the contention. And why would these men make up something? And here is what I ask you. Does this sound consistent with Bush or not? Now, if you said Bill Clinton or the man who legitimately won the presidency in 2000 or the one that won it legitimately in 2004, like Gore and Kerry, if they said, you go, whoa, man, it doesn't sound like them. But does this sound like George W. or not? George, go and fight those terrorists in Afghanistan. I mean, if he actually said these words, we got to get him out of office, folks. I mean, because he's lost it. He's a sandwich short of a picnic. Now, there's another aspect to this as well. And this was Bush's speech because he's trying to ramp up, the Bring Back the Fear tour. Because support in all sectors, including Republicans of the country, no longer have any confidence in the Iraq policy. It's getting worse and worse and worse. And when the Constitution passes, which it probably will, I don't think the Sunnis have enough people to deny the establishment of this sectarian Constitution, which sets up an Islamic state, which denies women rights, which gives religious courts authority over people. This is worse than this is worse than Saddam Hussein, by the way. This was not there. So you're going to have a Shiite government. Now, who in the region would they be allied with? Israel? No. Who? Oh, yeah, Iran. That's right. Iran's already complimenting the Shia on this constitution. So this is all going down the drain. But here, Bush gave this speech, and actually speaking to Kerry, John Kerry said, Bush continues to invent a false link between the war in Iraq and the tragedy of September 11th. Bush said Islamic extremists, we can't withdraw. Islamic extremists hope to use, quote, the vacuum created by an American retreat to gain control of Iraq and use it as a base for launching attacks against other countries. How does he know this? I mean, they found some letter. He says, the murderous ideology of the Islamic radicals is the great challenge of our new century. Like the ideology of communism, our new enemy teaches that innocent individuals can be sacrificed to serve a political vision. The militants, so he calls the insurgents there, believe that controlling one country will rally the Muslim masses, enabling them to overthrow all moderate governments in the region and establish a radical Islamic empire that spans from Spain to Indonesia. So this is the vision. This, what do they call it? The restored caliphate or something like that. And so he's elevated these irregulars. Guys, and I never tire of repeating this, one who I saw quoted prefers to fight barefoot to communism and in other places Nazism. The Wehrmacht and these 20,000 insurgents that are growing every day because of the United States occupation and the continuing brutality that's visited upon these people indiscriminately as these military goals are attempted to be carried out by us, the occupiers. No wonder people are pissed off and getting more pissed off. Bush declared, against such an enemy, there's only one effective response. We never back down, we never give in, and never accept anything less than complete victory. And this is the guy who says that God told him to do this. Very scary, very scary. So there's no room for compromise here. So this is going to go on. Remember, there's now one battalion capable. I mean, it went from three battalions down to one battalion capable of actually fighting on their own. We're close to 2,000 American deaths, 15,000 American injuries, 25 to 100,000 civilians killed, mostly by the United States military, collateral damage, still dead, mostly women and children and elderly. Where's this all going to end? Bob Bush says we've foiled all these terror plots as well, which is... if you go to my site, you can see it's mostly nonsense. One of them is the Jose Padilla guy. He was a former gang member who converted to Islam and allegedly plotted with Al-Qaeda commanders to detonate a radioactive dirty bomb. He's been held incommunicado for about 3 years. The reason they don't try him, the reason that he's being held in contravention of international law and U.S. law, is because they know there's no case there. They know how bad they would look if they bring Jose Padilla up, and they can't prove a damn thing. So there's no plot, foiled, like that. All right, lots more, including, and this is really big for us, but we'll talk about that in a while, Delphi, the world's second largest, is it the largest here? What is it? The world's second largest parts manufacturer has gone belly up in the Detroit area. What the hell is happening to our country? All right. Peter Werbe here with you, 313-298-WRIF. The show is Night Call, and here is William. William is in Columbus, Michigan. William, welcome to the show. Thanks for being our first guest or
thank
caller.
You, right? I hope you can understand me. I'm 85 years old, and I find your show refreshing.
Well, thank you.
And exciting. I think you're the only adversary to the... Rush Limbaugh program.
Well, I think there's a lot more these days. It's getting bigger and bigger.
Anyway, I think a lot of the problems that we look at today, like the fact that the children have been growing up in front of TV sets,
uh-huh.
TV sets are the babysitters.
Sure.
The women are all working. When I was with a kid, women didn't work. They just did a few of work, but not very many. Now they don't feel they have a choice. And we used to be a creditor nation. We lend money to other nations, and we had we used to be an export nation. We're now a import nation, and we're now a debtor nation.
Sure, that's amazing.
And we have so many problems that practically every one of them can be traced to one thing, and that's inflation.
Well, wait, William. There's not a lot of inflation, and there hasn't been over the last 10 years or so. I would say that we've been driven into debt by foolish policies, like spending hundreds of billions of dollars on the war by giving tax cuts to the ultra-wealthy. I don't think it's inflation.
Well, how much do you think inflation is?
I don't know. I don't think it's very much, about 1%.
About 3% a
year. What's that?
3% a year.
3%? I don't know if it's that big. But anyways, what do you, if 1%, 3%,
it's
whatever.
Not just the annual inflation that's important, but the overall inflation over the years. It's compounds, like the magic of compound interest.
Okay. That makes some sense.
So if you take from the time I was a kid, about 40 years ago, to today, there's a big jump. You very seldom find people... men able to hire a girl to come in and help their husband, help their wife. And you see so many things different today. This is not the country I grew up in.
No. Wait, but you were a kid 40 years ago?
I'll be 85 in December.
So you were a kid 80 years ago.
Yeah, right.
All right, William, thank you for calling the show. And thanks for calling in from Columbus, Michigan. I had a shout-out earlier to the people in northern Ohio. Here's Jason from Toledo, Ohio. Jason, hi, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Doing great.
A couple of thoughts. It was kind of a hard act to follow. But I think it's funny to note kind of the disparity between how things were when, say, Kennedy was running for president, and the big knock on him was, you know, how connected is he to the Pope? Is he too religious? And nowadays it's like you can't run for the office without really openly professing your faith. And in this case, it's really been taken to the extreme. It reminds me of a column I read. I forget it. It might have been Maureen Down who said that, you know, all of these right-wing Christian fanatics are criticizing this Henrietta Myers nomination when, you know, they voted for Bush because he was kind of a not-too-bright guy who was an evangelical, and she's the same thing, and yet, you know, they don't support her. Where's the logic in that?
Well, there's not any logic. And you know what disturbs me, Jason, is that in a secular country, the voices of religious leaders, all exclusively from the far right wing, Bush says, I have no litmus test. Yeah, there's a litmus test that gets the approval from these right wing evangelicals. I mean, could you imagine that if Clinton had said, well, I'm going to bring in a far-left liberal judge, and I'm going to have to get the okay of the NAACP and the UAW and groups like that, the right wing would have gone absolutely ballistic. Instead, Clinton put in these moderates. And in a country that's split, although it's not even split anymore, but at the time was split, you would think that Bush would have the decency to put in somebody that reflected the feelings of so they wouldn't exclude a whole sector of the population, but instead everything is ideological and it's all his incompetent cronies. I mean, he's accused of cronyism, putting in his buddies in, and then he puts in, of all the jurists in the country, conservatives, liberal, moderate, what have you, he puts in his personal lawyer. What's that all about?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the other thing is, if she gets, she's got probably a good chance to be nominated, because a lot of the Democrats figure, man, anybody else is going to be worse than her. Is that how is she going to rule on all these cases that have to do with decisions that came out of the Bush administration itself? She was there making policy.
Right.
She's going to have to recuse herself. Well, I can't do that one because I was there. It's insane. It's insane.
It is, and you know, it's funny because if you look at kind of the nexus of the Republican Party, it has a lot of these different kind of factions that you wouldn't normally associate, you know, with each other. You got people who are in a very free market, and then you have the evangelicals, and then you have the neoconservatives, which are kind of predominantly Jewish. And I think the thinking is, at least among the neocons, is that anything that you can use to control the public, or to keep the public down, or to stop dissent, is kind of a means to an end. And I think that's the thinking with the employment of these evangelical philosophies. It's like, you know, that's the idea of this organized religion, is to keep people organized and to obey authority and to obey the guy in charge. And if you don't do that, then it's like sacrilege.
Let me just comment on that. One of the things I've noted, you can go to any liberal talk show, and contrary to what William was saying, there's a considerable number of them, both nationally and locally now. They're always all over the Democrats. I'm talking about the liberals are always being critical of the Democratic Party for what they're not doing, sometimes what they do. You turn on to these right-wing shows, many of which, have, by the way, have lost tremendous amount of market share, people listening. William mentioned Rush Limbaugh. He's gone from 25 million listeners to 10 million, or 15 million listeners. He's lost 10 million listeners. And if they've ever had a criticism of Republican policy, it's only like this time that the person that involved, or the policy involved, is not far right wing enough. All right, actually, I got to move on. Jason, thanks for calling in from Ohio. I certainly appreciate that. Here is John from Taylor. John, it's Peter Werby. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? First of all, I say is that, you know, I'm an independent. I'm not a liberal or a, you know, a Republican, but I do want to say that I think that Bush isn't getting a fair shake in the media right now. I mean, he hasn't...
Oh, poor baby. He's not getting a fair shake in the media. Man, he got such a free ride for 5 years. They could beat him up 100%, and he would barely be even.
I'm not saying he's done everything right. I didn't vote for Bush, okay? But what I'm saying is you got this total media pummeling on the guy, and he just can't win. Anything he does... He can't win.
Well, he screws up everything, John. No wonder. I mean, listen, give me an idea how he's being pummeled. I mean, in other words, that's kind of means that he's not getting a fair shake. Where in the media and in what stories and in what... I mean, finally, the media has gotten some backbone, and they're really reporting on what's going on. And, of course, he's looking bad because he's an awful president. He's probably the worst president in United States history. And although two-thirds of us think we're in the wrong direction, wait, you're probably young enough. You 30 years, 40 years from now, when they judge this administration, when everything comes out about it, when they realize the depth of corruption and cronyism, I think that view will be held almost universally, that this, if this presidency even lasts to the end of its term, it's going to be the worst presidency ever. Are you with me?
Well, you think that, I mean, you know...
Well, you know what's happening? You are breaking up big time, and I know you had more to say. When you get to the landline, next time call me or, you're in a better spot. All right, thanks. We'll be right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
It's the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at MediaPlay, and you can win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit WRIF.com.
Everything that rocks.
Centerfold Lounge, Detroit's sexiest adult entertainment club, is celebrating their 20th anniversary. That's 20 years of hot ladies, rock and roll, and fun. Come celebrate with 20th anniversary specials, a complimentary buffet, buckets of beer for $20, and two for $20 dances. Take pleasure in great giveaways as you dance to the beats of the house DJ. Centerfold, with the greatest ladies, music, and light show. Bachelor and bachelorette parties are always welcome. NFL Sunday, Centerfold opens at noon with great food, including pizza and wings, dollar drafts, and $3 bottles. Get there early to catch the game on the big screens. Centerfold Lounge opens 7 days a week at 2 p.m. on John R. One block south of 8 Mile Road. Call 313-892-7333 for more details. Centerfold Lounge, 20th anniversary and NFL action. Football, buffets, hot ladies, rock and roll, and big specials.
Center of attraction.
I'm here with Ms. Alma Sheridan, who's showing off all the things she's bought with her gambling winnings.
This is the display case where I keep my collection of rare figurines bought with the winnings at the slot machine. What's that, dear?
Well, it's empty.
Oh, well, yes, that's true. See, my money's still in the machine, but I'll get it back. Now, this room is my pride and joy, furnished with priceless Victorian antiques, thanks to the roulette table.
Say, don't those chairs fold?
Well, they'll be Victorian antiques when that lousy marble starts landing on the right numbers.
You know, Alma, gambling's fun, but odds are against you making big profits, which is why the Michigan Department of Community Health urges you to please gamble responsibly.
Do you like my gown? It's an Italian design.
Isn't that a jogging suit, Alma?
Sure, now it is.
To learn about the warning signs of problem gambling, you can call 1-800-270-7117.
Say, what's your favorite color?
Blue.
Red, you say?
That's 1-800-270-7117.
Are you looking for a job in a fast-paced environment where the money's good and your winning attitude can brighten someone's day? Then you're ready for a career at Abuelo's Mexican Food Embassy. We're looking for friendly, dependable people to join the Abuelo's team as host and waitstaff, kitchen and bartenders. Join the team by applying at Abuelo's.
Now hiring in Sterling Heights at 44350 Shaner. Apply in person at the trailer on location Monday through Saturday, 8:30 to 6.
Discover Mexico. Discover Abuelo's. Brad, you won't believe it.
What?
I know you and Sarah have been looking for a new place, right?
Yeah, but everything's too expensive.
Well, what I'm about to tell you is crazy, unbelievable, the coolest.
Just tell me.
Right now, you and Sarah can own a condo on Walled Lake for under $200,000.
Yeah, right.
East Bay Condos. Check out the code at East Bay. 2 bedrooms, 1.5 bath, garage, GE appliance package, everything. Guess how much? Go on, guess.
$189,900
at East Bay Condos. I'm not even kidding. The cove is quality and could be yours. Buy today and move into East Bay now. Seriously, pack your stuff and move in tonight. $189,900, you're done. Nothing extra.
No way. I can't believe it. How is that possible? East Bay Condos are awesome.
Yeah, East Bay Condos. At East Bay, you'll be surrounded by the changing colors of Walled Lake and invite friends and family over with 1,300 square feet and a finished lower level. You'll be entertaining all the time.
We're there. Now what?
EastBayWalledLake.com. Hurry up. Don't wait. The first 10 people to visit East Bay this weekend will receive a free tank of gas up to $50 in value. No purchase necessary. EastBayWalledLake.com.
Another WRIF concert.
Born dark, leaving, glass, and globin'.
A double shot of rock to flippery. Same night, same stage. Cheap Trick.
I want you to want.
October 23rd, the Palace of Auburn Hills. Two of rock's most explosive performers. Together on stage, Def Leppard and Cheap Trick. The driving force of Def Leppard. The electrified energy of Cheap Trick. One night, one ticket. October 23rd, the Palace of Auburn Hills. Tickets are on sale right now. Get yours at cellardoor.com, palacenet.com, the Palace Box Office, and all Ticketmaster outlets. A double shot of rock, Def Leppard, and Cheap Trick.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome, Bad. Welcome, Bad. Whew. That's a Freudian sleep, isn't it? All right. 313-298-WRIF. Call talk yes at yahoo.com. We're talking about my contention that we're being ruled by a religious nut who thinks God speaks directly to him. That according to the, where'd that go? The Prime Minister of Palestine who met with him. This is going to be aired on the BBC. That Bush said, you can tell I am, here. According to, actually, the foreign minister of Palestine, along with Abu Mazen, who is the Palestinian prime minister, he said that Bush said, I'm driven with a mission from God. God would tell me, George, go and fight those terrorists in Afghanistan, and I did. And then God would tell me, George, go and end the tyranny in Iraq, and I did. I feel God's words coming to me. Go get the you ought to be out of here if he's hearing voices from God. And what do you think about my contention that God should not be in the public square? This is a quote from evangelicals. They say people like myself and others are trying to drive God from the public square. I want to get Pat Robertson out of there. I want to get all these religious nutballs that are really hiding behind Christianity to put forth this far right-wing program that interferes and intervenes directly in our lives. And that also backs the ultra-wealthy. I mean, that's one of the things that they do as well. Well, John writes in the call talk yes at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. You know, he actually went to another, I guess it works. If you go to this other email address, it comes there anyways. All right. Love your show. Agree with your views. I myself am not a very religious person, but as I grow older, only 29, I find myself more comforted in the fact that God does exist. Why do you think that? Anyway, my question is this. If you, me, some guy or gal believes in God, wouldn't it be comforting to know that he's speaking through someone? A prophet? Like who? I mean, you got George Bush saying that. That doesn't comfort me at all. Somebody better. Who? Who would you like to see God speak through? How about me? I could do that. I can't think of any. I was going to do a godlike voice, but I couldn't think of any pronouncements. Stop hassling other people. Something like that. God can do better than that. Hi, Peter. Robert from Port Huron. I love your idea about extending a $50,000 annual exemption for every citizen, but there's a little something extra. I'd like to add to it the tax any income from $50,000 to $100,000 in a 10% bracket. $100,000 to $500,000 would fall into a 15. Over $500,000, 20%. Also, well, yeah, actually, it should be much, much larger than that. When you see that the 400 richest people in this country are sitting on like $1 trillion of wealth, when there are so many problems that the majority of people have in terms of maintaining a standard of living that you know that we think adequate. I mean, they ought to do what they did before 1960. And that's once you get over 5 million, there's like a 90% tax. Yeah, that would do it. These go a long way. Let's see. Donald writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Big fan of your show, and I just had to show you this. Don't know what this means. I haven't looked at it. Apparently, we don't need to worry about things like gas prices and our troops in harm's way because the only thing wrong with the world is internet porn. Oh, I see. He says, I'm sorry if I'm a little ill-informed, but this just seems to scream for negative attention. Yeah, these religious nuts think that that the porn industry, that's, you say, what's wrong with America? Porn. Porn, of course, a larger industry than all the major sports combined. So people are really laying out the bucks for porn. I thought you could get it free on the internet. Why? Somebody tell me about this. Why are people paying for porn when you can see porn for free on the internet? All right. Actually, I'm talking too much. Let me get you guys on. Here is Chris. Chris is in Ann Arbor waiting patiently. Chris, Peter Werby, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Pete. Hi. I would like to talk about the separation of church and state thing you were talking about earlier.
Sure.
And I'd like to commend you for mentioning that the phrase separation of church and state is definitely not in the Constitution. And I would think the majority of Americans believe it is in there somewhere.
I don't know if they do or don't, but it's an old concept. It was just put, the concept of church and state was there from the founding fathers who had the experience in Europe and were terrified of the intermingling of church and state. Go ahead.
I would agree, but I was wondering what you would say about the fact that in the late 1700s, you say that religion shouldn't be in the public square, but what do you think about the federal government actually printing Bibles for schools? And if they ran out of printed Bibles, they would actually use taxpayer money to purchase Bibles.
They did that in the late 18th century?
Yeah.
Well, that's when we needed the ACLU, I guess. Maybe that's why they were founded.
Well, I mean, but the founding, I mean, it was the same people in power that wrote the Constitution that had this theory of separation of church and state. But they not only printed Bibles and bought them, they used taxpayer money to build churches.
They may have. I think the only atheist among them, if he was, and if I don't even know if I'm correct, is, what's his name? What's the most radical of all of them?
Ben Franklin was pretty radical.
Yeah, but then there was another one who wrote The Age of Reason, and why can't I think of his name?
Well, Thomas Jefferson wasn't exactly a fan of the Christians either.
He was a radical, too. All right, one more guy. We'll think of him as we go along. Email me.
But the majority of them were all deists.
Yeah.
Believing, I wouldn't call them Christians, but they were all God-fearing Americans, you know, and they wrote, I mean, I can go on and on about the laws they wrote, that it wasn't necessarily establishing a country's religion, but it was promoting Christianity in several different ways.
Yeah. So, well, there has been, says on our money, in God we trust. I think that's inappropriate.
Right, and
how would you like to live in a country that if it was dominated by people like me, that required kids to take some oath that talked about no God and the money disparaged God and what have you? I mean, it would seem to me absolutely inappropriate.
Well, I would agree. It's just you said, you know, you said you were a strict constitutionalist on the separation of church and state, and the people that wrote it were, you know, printing Bibles and building churches.
Well, I agree. I've heard other stuff like that, and I think that violates the terms of the Constitution. I don't know, why did they stop? Well, I mean, at what point did I mean, I'm assuming, I'm taking your that you're reporting this fact correctly. When did the government stop doing it and why?
I'm not sure. I would imagine it's when the ACLU, the Antichrist Liberal Union, showed up.
Well, I hope the Antichrist Liberal Union. I'll join that. All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your call. Wait a minute. I wanted to get this in here. Dan from Daytona Beach, Florida, writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He writes, Dan, your libertarian friend in Daytona Beach. First of all, I'm a Christian. Hey, man, libertarians do not believe in God. They're these kind of Randian, you know, Ayn Rand, that awful fiction where she put forth her awful ideas. She was an atheist, and you're kicked out of the. You're not a libertarian. You're kicked out, dude. He says, first of all, I'm a libertarian, but come on, God wants you to start wars. I thought Jesus spoke about turning the other cheek. The Bible warns of false prophets in Revelation. The Republican Party are these false prophets. The Bible warns you about. Okay, I mean, I don't know. I don't read the Bible, so whatever you say. Oh, Thomas Paine. Right. Thank you. Thomas Paine was the most radical. Thank you to Steve for writing in. And I also wonder, am I correct? Was he an atheist? I am comforted by God. I have to read this. John writes in, I don't know, Peter. I guess it's a parental thing. Who knows? Life is tough, and that what makes it fun, but it's nice that someone's got my back. You think God's got your back? That's if you don't live in Iraq, or you don't live in Central America, or you don't live in Pakistan, or where else? You don't live in New Orleans or the Mississippi Gulf Coast. If you weren't a Jew in Europe, on and on and on. Got your back. Wow. By the way, thanks for reading the second part of my previous email. You made me sound like a Bush, like Bush. I already read one from you already tonight? I never do that. All right. Anyway. Let's go back to your calls. The next is someone whose name does not appear on here. Hi, you're on the air. Who's this?
It's Tom in White Lake.
Hi, Tom.
How are you doing, Peter?
Doing great.
Peter, I do recommend you read the Bible. Even if you don't believe it, I think you'd find it interesting. Let me say this. As a Christian, a creationist, I believe that religion is exactly what's wrong about the God, what I will say is theory, because obviously there's no fact. But what I will argue is that if it's okay to teach, just like you say, if it's okay to believe in God, then you shouldn't be forced to pray under certain situations. Wouldn't you think that it should be taught in school, just like evolution is? Shouldn't creationism be taught in school?
Well, it's not science. Scientists don't believe it, and all the biological sciences are based on the evolution of species theory. And if at the beginning of classes, I don't even know. I think I've got an interview about this later tonight. I don't know that I would necessarily object to this. It would say that religious explanations say blah, 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 blah. But you can't teach creationism or you can't teach intelligent design because there's no science to it. And if you teach our kids creationism, they're going to go to college and they're going to be a pack of idiots because all important scientific discoveries of the last 100 years are based on those theories. And with creationism and intelligent design and a dollar, you can get on the bus.
All I'm saying is teach at least the possibilities of creationism. And what they're teaching our kids is that basically in school you open your science book and guaranteed without a doubt there is no God.
Well, wait a minute. That's not true at all. If we realize that the majority of people in this country believe in the Judeo-Christian story of that this God exists and did stuff, then they're religious. They're most people, including the Pope, said that there is absolutely no conflict between God creating the earth and Darwin's theories. But where you teach creationism is where it has its basis, and that is in a church. You don't teach it in a science classroom because it has no application to any of the biological sciences. It's a dead end, and it's an attempt to thrust religion into what should be a neutral space for learning.
Well, you know, there's a number of creationalist scientists that would debate that. But the only reason I brought that up is because my point is that I agree with you. I think Bush is off his rocker. However, I do believe that in the long run, because of the whole Supreme Court thing, even though I do not agree with this last choice, that I think for the country in the long run, it was best that he was president at the time instead of Kerry. I do believe, you know, and the one thing is that when someone believes in God,
yeah,
which this is the scariest thing, is that the little voice in their head sometimes they think is God, and that can be a big problem a lot of times.
Well, I guess, but wait a minute, back up. What was this thing about Bush? It was good that Bush was president instead of Kerry. When?
Because of the Supreme Courts now, the replacements, and I just, you know, if Kerry was in there, I mean, I'm even though I'm left-handed, I lean to the right. You know, I don't say I'm a wholehearted Republican, but there are certain things that I just don't understand their points of view, and I just don't, you know. Why would you want to take this away from me because he used it, you know, to kill someone? Whatever it is, it's just everything just seems to be, don't let anyone have it because the bad guys will use it in
a
bad way.
What's the it here? What's the it?
Well, guns for one.
No, I don't want to get into that. I don't. Kerry nor no one else is talking about taking away anyone's gun, so that's not an issue. I think that we've got to get into. But thank you. I appreciate your other remarks. And yeah, if you listen in, I don't know when. Yeah, I'll play this at 1 o'clock. Eastern Time, 1 a.m., the interview with Eugenie C. Scott from the National Education for Science, something like that. Anyways, they have to now defend, actually, the assaults on science from these religious extremists that want to undercut. I mean, we're having such problems as it is with science in this country, and to erode it by putting in religious beliefs where scientific beliefs should be, man, that even creates a bigger problem. All right, we'll be right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants, like the Shark Club on Ford Road, just east of Canton Center Road in Canton. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price, but quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to WRIF.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings. Like Buddy's Pizza, come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at WRIF.com.
Don't waste another second. For the first time ever, Media Play has all the top hits at just $8.99. Nickelback.
$8.99.
Franz Ferdinand.
$8.99.
Swiss Them.
$8.99.
David Banner.
$8.99.
You'll pay less for hit CDs than the music stores do.
Fiona Apple.
$8.99. OAR.
$8.99.
Trina.
$8.99.
Simple Plan.
$8.99.
All the top hits, all $8.99.
Shine Down.
$8.99.
Snoop Dogg.
$8.99.
Miss Fair.
$8.99.
Sean Paul.
$8.99.
And if you think Media Play's price on top hits is low, wait until you see our price on the new release Cinderella on DVD. But don't waste a second. When the sale ends, all the top hits for $8.99 will all be gone.
Kirk Franklin.
$8.99.
3-6 Mafia.
$8.99.
Hurry to Media Play Halloween headquarters and get hits for $8.99.
$8.99.
Guys, the biggest party around will be this Tuesday night at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite will be there live in person to party with you and your friends, along with the beautiful Leopard's Lounge girls. It's your chance to vote for Pedro and vote for the most beautiful Leopard's Lounge girl. If you've never been to Leopard's Lounge before, you're missing all the fun. Not only does Leopard's Lounge have the most beautiful women in the world, there's never a cover charge, ever. Everyone else has a cover charge, but not at Leopard's Lounge. Hey, Pedro knows where the action is. You should too. It's everything you could ever want. Beer, sexy, beautiful women, and no cover charge. Plus, it's easy to get to. Just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel in Windsor at 1190 Wyandotte West. The Leopard's Lounge girls are there to show you a good time, so don't keep them waiting. Join the party this Tuesday night, live with Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite and the incredible Leopard's Lounge girls. We'll see you there.
Transportation provided by Limousine Express.
It's time to live the mortgage experts. 800-333-ROCK. 20 years in the lead. 800-333-ROCK. It's time to live.
And we want to say thank you to you, all of our clients out there. It's our 20-year anniversary, and we're excited. And right now, for folks that have credit card debt, you need to be careful. Credit card minimum payments are going to be doubling soon. So you want to consolidate that debt, and the mortgage experts can help you right now. If you call today, a mortgage expert can help you consolidate that credit card debt, reduce your payments now.
It's time to live. Yeah. 800-333-ROCK.
Equal housing lender.
Football is back, and the Pantheon Club in Dearborn knows that you want great entertainment with beautiful girls, great drink specials, and lots of football. Come to the Pantheon for Monday Night Football and watch the game on one of five big screen TVs. Enjoy $15 buckets of beer and touchdown shot specials. Your paid admission enters you to win a DVD player or a 27-inch color TV.
As always, the Pantheon is the place to be on Saturdays from 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. for college football with 75-cent beers and lots of girls. The Pantheon Club is open Mondays through Saturdays from 11 a.m. till 2 a.m. and Sundays from 7 p.m. till 2 a.m. with $1 beer specials Monday through Fridays till 7 p.m. every weekday. Enjoy the lowest beer prices, cover, and valet around at the Pantheon Club. And credit card customers now get in free. The Pantheon Club is located at the corner of Michigan Avenue and Oakman. To avoid construction, exit the Southfield Freeway at Ford Road and turn right on Oakman Avenue to Michigan Avenue. It's right on the corner.
Remember, football, beautiful women, and great drink specials are all waiting for you at the Pantheon Club in Dearborn.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual when he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program that helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. At 1 a.m. in exactly 1 hour, I'll be airing an interview with Eugenie C. Scott. She's the director of the National Center for Science Education. Now, this was the group I was trying to remember their long title by memory. And let me see. Well, you can go to my website. This even this website address is too long. PeterWerbe.com, PeterWerbe.com. It defends the teaching of evolution in public schools, and it's quite a task now because it's under intense attack by these right-wing fundamentalists who want to put in this religious explanation. It has no basis in science, does not work as the basis of the biological sciences at all. And I think maybe even our last caller was saying, well, there's a number of scientists who believe in creationism. Well, there's not very many. There's not very many. Let me tell you that. You can hear all this tomorrow again, by the way, if you'd like to. That the show is going to be rebroadcast at 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. at radiopower.org. It's going to be archived at whiterosesociety.org. It's going to be podcasted at wrif.com. Download the podcast from there. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Let's revisit a little what we were talking about. And my thought, taking the words from the Christian right or the right-wing Christians, I don't know which is the, Christian right-wingers. I think that's what they are. Essentially, they're right-wingers and they're driven for some reason or other because you can take, Christianity and be liberals or radicals or whatever. There are a number of Christian radicals, to be sure. Anyways, they say people like myself want to, quote, drive God from the public square. And I said, yes, absolutely correct. Let's get God and religion and all that out of public life. It's not like it makes us politicians more moral. I mean, particularly right-wingers, but all politicians are always saying, yes, I believe in God, I believe in Jesus and all that. I mean, does anybody take that seriously? Even, I don't even know if I take George Bush seriously. I mean, he might be a religious fanatic. I'm beginning to think, what I essentially was saying, he's a religious nut. And he thinks God talks directly to him. Here are the words of James Madison. The quote, the purpose of separation of church and state is to keep forever from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe with blood for centuries. All these religious wars, they're still going on. They're going on in Iraq, which we've intervened on one side, right? So we're backing the Shias against the Sunnis. And Bush, too, has this crusader view now because he is going to combat the Muslims. This is 15th century Europe. This is what he's created. I mean, he's gone 6,000 miles from our home to fight the Muslims because he does not want the establishment of, what's their phrase, some renewed caliphate or something like that. In other words, he takes for granted these people that probably have a total, and I'm talking about the Osama bin Forgottens of the world, not the people that increasingly join the insurgency in Iraq, young men particularly, because they're outraged by the damage the United States occupation is doing, the death of thousands, of tens of thousands of civilians. But rather, the people that are ideologically driven to fight the United States as the great Satan. So they have maybe their, 5,000? Who knows? But they don't have very many people. So they say, we're going to rule the world from Spain to Indonesia. And Bush goes, they're the same as the Nazis. They're the same as the communists. The communists had the atomic bomb. The Nazis had the Wehrmacht. They almost had the atomic bomb. We're talking about some guys that fight barefoot. So Bush is a certifiable lunatic, as far as I'm concerned, and it gets worse, because according to Palestinian ministers, he said that God directly talks to him. George, go and fight those terrorists in Afghanistan. This is what he's quoted as saying in this BBC documentary that's coming up. And I did. And when God would then tell me, George, go and end the tyranny in Iraq, I was going to say, how does he know him by name? But I guess if God is omniscient, knows everything, knows all. He knows, he knows when you are sleeping, right? He knows when you've been, what's that? Oh, no, that's Santa Claus. Never mind. I can't remember that. He knows when you, I don't know. Anyways, I can't remember the words to it. Yeah, I'm thinking about too many things. So that's what James Madison said. The ceaseless strife. So we have strife here. We have all these Pat Robertsons and Dobsons and people like that. Robertson now, he's got his new things that, everything that may be happening, the earthquakes, the tsunamis, the hurricanes, this might be the end times described in the Bible. The Christian Coalition, which he founded, by the way, has been just collapsing. It owes everybody money. It went from a peak income of $26 million 9 years ago to now $1.3. Who's dumb enough to still contribute money to these morons? I don't know. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Just real quickly. I'll clear my throat. Remember Tom Paine, my favorite founding father. Well, along with Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin. That some of these people have, and thank you for doing it, have written in a couple of times, so I don't want to go back over there, but it said that Ben Franklin believed in God, but he was hostile to organized religion. Another, someone else whose mail I read says Tom Paine was not an atheist, but was accused by his contemporaries. And let's see, where in here? Oh, yeah, Bruce, listening in Greensboro, North Carolina, says, I know you can't read this this website he gave me, but I'm reasonably sure that Paine was an atheist. His contribution to the American Revolution was overshadowed by his religious views at the time, and very few attended his funeral when he died. Yeah, the French revolutionaries were atheists, and he was a big hit over there. Let's see, Tom is listening in Ann Arbor, and he says, I can't believe what I heard you read the transcript of Little Georgie's speech the other day. I don't know about you, but it seems to me that Bush's writers are cribbing their material from some of the worst domino theory speeches from the Vietnam War era. You know, like if we let South Vietnam go, then the dominoes are going to fall and everything's going to be communist. Really, reread that portion of the speech transcript again while thinking domino theory, and we can see that even the administration is finally admitting that the troops have been what the troops have been saying all along. Iraq is Arabic for Vietnam, or Iraq, Vietnam with sand. Welcome to the quagmire will soon become the administration's new credo, and they will somehow attempt to spin this as being positive. We're in a mess, folks. We got to get rid of this guy, and we got to do it. We can't wait. We can't have him in office until January 20th, 2009. He's going to do too much damage. Here's Tim in Detroit. Tim, thanks for waiting so patiently and calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, how you doing?
Doing great.
Yeah, I want to talk about something called the Discovery Institute in Seattle.
Okay.
And the Discovery Institute is basically a right-wing pseudo-think tank, and what it does is it promotes all these scientists, and many of them often not having degrees from reputable universities, and what they do is they put out a lot of propaganda material regarding intelligent design.
Okay.
And a lot of these guys are funded by the Bush administration, and I think the same guy who funded pretty much the whole conspiracy to get Clinton. And what these
Escape. Yeah, he does. He puts up all this money. All these right-wing millionaires put up all this money for this nonsense.
Yeah, and what these guys basically do is they write these propaganda tracts and pretty much say, well, we have to pretty much assault evolution on these so-called grounds that there's not enough evidence for it. But, you know, most, if not all scientists pretty much say that the best working theory for what we can explain the way the Earth was created, in a sense, is evolution. In other words, you can even go into the geological evidence.
Well, they don't even accept it. I mean, these people say, what about these fossil remains? Is it God put them there to test our faith? Or you say that the Earth was created 4,700 years ago, yet all this stuff tests out with these instruments to be millions of years old. What do they say? Well, God did that, too.
You'd have to effectively contradict then the idea of something called uniformitarianism in geology, which pretty much says that layers of the Earth kind of build up at a uniform rate.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, theoretically, you could posit this idea that there's some sort of creator who violates his own laws.
Well, hey, if he's omnipotent, he can do anything, right?
Except lift a stone. Actually, speaking of stone, she's actually an author of a book called When God Was a Woman.
And who's that?
Her last name is Stone. I don't remember her first name. This book came out, I think, in the 1980s.
Uh-huh.
So it's been around for a while. And basically, this book kind of talks about the history of how the idea of a patriarchal god was sort of imposed in the Middle Eastern area several thousand years ago.
Oh, wait a minute. It has a very direct relationship to the rise of the political state. Before there was the formal institution of the state, and people lived a fairly egalitarian life, and all the relationships were matriarchal. Gods were infused into every aspect of life. So there's gods in trees and streams and everything like that. When authoritarian rule comes in the form of the state to protect the wealth of this emerging set of rulers, then what develops are a couple of things. One, our sky gods. They're no longer in the earth. They're up in the sky. And this is cross-culture. This is across the world like this. And they also become patriarchal. And they become punishing. And they also were told by the class of priests that arise with the state that these gods absolutely support and ordain the class of rulers who now have power and privilege and everything else that goes along with it. It's a racket.
It is a wreck. And then I also want to say one more thing regarding that caller before who was so-called independent, who was saying that the press is too hard on Bush.
Yeah.
Now, from my vantage point, the press is actually laid down for Bush quite a bit. You know, the WMD issue, the whole Tom DeLay issue, you know, the whole scandal regarding the budget. You know, Karl Rove basically effectively committed an act of treason by revealing Valerie Plame.
Well, hopefully the man will be indicted and frog-marched out of the White House. Tim, thank you very much for calling in from Detroit. Oh, boy, we've been letting Chris wait too long. Chris, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Thanks for being so patient.
Hey, how you doing today? Long time listener of your show.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, I got one thing to say, and this is to all those right-wing Republicans, and, you know, I got to agree with you 100%. The media is finally letting the American public know, and we're sick of Bush. You ever notice he gets on TV and repeats the same thing over and over again about gas prices? He tells us things we already know. We don't need him to do that.
Yeah.
We're not stupid. We can look for ourselves. When you see $3 a gallon of gas, jobs leaving this country, people starving, you know, we're so worried about everybody else in the world. How can we afford to take care of everybody else when we can't afford to take care of our own people here in this country?
Well, you know, actually, I mean, I agree with you in general, but most of our money is not going overseas, although billions and billions and billions of it have. I mean, in other words, on a yearly basis, it's not a real high percentage. But if we had back every dollar we gave to military dictatorships and to countries in the Middle East, we would have a much different circumstance in this this country. We'd have the money instead of you know, one of the things that happens, by the way, though, is that they'll give Egypt or Israel money, and then they buy planes or they buy tanks, whereas we could take our money, which supports that process, and use it for what we need: our schools, our roads, our health system, and all that. So I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, Bush, I mean, you know, I think what he is, I think he's running out of things to say to the people because he knows he's getting battered, so he's convinced himself of his lies as being his truth. You know, I mean, seriously, you know, we're supposed to be the world superpower here, but China's gaining on us, you know, as fast as it can be. We can't have that happen to us. We're supposed to be the world technology and superpower leader. But instead, you know, China may pass us if they keep this up.
Well, yeah, and well, I would put it the other way around. I would say if we keep this up, they're going to pass us.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree with you. I mean, you know, every day Bush gets on TV, oh, well, these terrorists. Why do these people hate us? I mean, really, let's think about why these people hate us. Let's go back in the time, 1980s, Russia invades Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden asks us for help. We give him help. What do? We back out. We have a bad tendency of helping people and then backing out, and then we wonder why these people hate us, because you have people like Bush that get into power, do all these stupid things, and then they end up leaving these people in shambles. Well, guess what, Bush? You did yourself a good one. Now we can't get out of it.
Well, I wonder, Chris, if we would completely disengage from the Middle East except diplomatically and weren't giving armaments to Israel and weren't giving armaments to Egypt and weren't giving armaments to Jordan and Kuwait and on, how much these people... There could be still this hatred for us, but I'll bet it would be reduced significantly, absolutely significantly. All right, Chris, thanks for joining me at 313-298-WRIF. Those of you not in the Detroit area who are listening, but this has been repeated so many places all around the country. In huge type on the front page of the Joint Detroit News and Detroit Free Press today, it says, "Staggering Blow." That's the huge headline. "Delphi's bankruptcy, ominous sign for fading Detroit auto industry." Now, Delphi is the world's second largest manufacturer. It has 185,000 employees worldwide. And in this country, 33,000 unionized workers. It means these are people that will work hard every day and get compensated decently. And that means that's what union wages do, at least come as close to it as possible. Many of you work extraordinarily hard in non-union places and essentially get screwed, get looted of the value you're producing for the company that's employing you, and looted of the time of your life. I mean, if you're going to be in a shop, which ain't the best place in the world to spend 8 hours a day, at least you should be getting a lot of money from it, particularly when these companies are profitable. So why aren't they profitable anymore? Well, what they want to do is they want to shut down U.S. plants, they want to cut workers, and they want to slash benefits. Well, you know, the union workers have just priced themselves out of the market. Yeah, if we weren't human beings, I would maybe give some credence to that thought. But is it really awful that people combined against these greedy corporations to have a decent middle class standard of living? That we ought to have this race to the bottom. Well, the Chinese are working at 80 cents an hour. Maybe we should make 79 cents an hour, or something like that. You can see where this is going. But there is, on the other hand, something fundamentally disturbing. It's got to be greater than that. The wealthiest country in the world, the most powerful country in the world, and poverty's increasing here. Companies that we thought were bedrock. I mean, is Ford going to last? Is the United Auto Workers going to last? I mean, they are operating at a loss, that union. But here, just some of the language here. The American auto industry was rocked to the foundation Saturday as Delphi Corporation filed for bankruptcy and laid plans to dramatically downsize its U.S. operations. It means screw you, people that work there, that do your damnedest, that try to be, pardon me, a good employee, and the communities in which you live, like the Detroit area, you're just going to get retrained. Remember, let's see, where was some? Oh yeah, here, this is a quote from. Well, how do you get? Oh yeah, it must be his middle name, Robert S. Miller, and then Steve, in quotes, Steve Miller. Oh, they probably call him that because of the band, you know, that classic rock band. But on the front page of the newspaper here, what the move means for the Michigan economy. What happens next? We're screwed! Oh, no, it doesn't say that. What does this filing mean for the Michigan economy? With the potential for job losses and factory closing, Michigan, which has a 6.7% unemployment rate, 2% higher than the national average, would see thousands more out of work. Areas like Grand Rapids and Saginaw, and then it's continued. So this does not bode well. And, you know, this has a ripple effect, too. I was talking with people here at work. All of a sudden, the economy goes even worse here in Michigan. People start advertising less for on radio station. Anyways, here's what Steve Miller, not the take the money and run. Actually, it could be. That could be his theme song. How about that? Steve Miller, take the money and run. You know that classic rock song? I'm not going to try to sing it for you. Here's what Steve says. We all understand very well that life is not going to continue the way it has been. That's what the CEO of Delphi says. We all understand very well that life is not going to continue the way it has been. Here's what Debbie Brooks says. She's a Delphi worker. She's worried about what the future holds. There's nobody in there who can afford it. So, look a little at this statement that we all understand very well that life is not going to continue the way it is, has been. I bet it does for Steve Miller. I bet it does for all these execs. I bet nothing happens to them. I bet you Debbie Brooks winds up on the unemployment line or working for maybe $20 an hour less. That's who's going to eat it. The people that give their lives for their company. I don't mean that they're doing it like someone's sacrificing, but in many ways it is a sacrifice to do that kind of work and get paid low wages, at least if you have a union job and you have benefits and everything like that. But yeah, you know, she's going to wind up at Walmart's with these owned by these multi-billionaires. The family has more money than everyone else in the country, including Bill Gates. Maybe get to that in a second. And Walmart, they'll close a store rather than allow it to be unionized. And I've said this before, Walmart, with the money that they have, they could pay everybody in their employ $30 an hour, have the best benefits imaginable, have nurseries there, gyms, have these stores instead of these ugly pieces of crap that they sell their stuff in, have them be these architectural wonders with environmental ponds and trees. And so, in other words, I forgot how many workers they got. Hundreds of thousands, something like that. Anyways, pay them all $30 an hour. And you know what? How that would affect their overall wealth? They'd still be multi-billionaires. So this is psychotic greed on the part of these people. And you just start looking at all this stuff, all these little things I have here. Bush plan shows U.S. is not ready for deadly flu. This is the guy that was going to protect us from terrorists. This is the guy that was going to protect us from everything, Big Daddy, right? But they have nothing in place worth a response plan for the avian flu any more than they did for Katrina. And the plan, which has just come out, a draft of this final plan, which is really frightening, but the worst-case scenario, it could be cost that could exceed $450 billion. Where is this all coming from? NASA planning to return to the moon within 13 years, $104 billion. Where is that coming from? And according to the Forbes 400, America's richest 400 just got richer. Where did they get this money from? Did they, quote, make it? Somebody has to produce value. I mean, sure, some of it is just all this, what they call fictive or fictitious capital that just is, you know, in computers and what have you. But as we know, the middle class actually fell a notch or so overall. And I say this every time we talk about it. If you got a raise or you're making more money than you did 10 years ago, that doesn't alter the aggregate wealth of, for instance, the middle class. The poor have gotten poorer. So what's happened? It's been a shift of wealth. And you say, well, they earned it. They didn't earn it. And of course, you know, who is, let's see, the fourth? That's a tie for fourth, yeah. Fourth. How do they do that? One, two, three, four, five. Yeah. Five people right in the middle, tied for fourth, each have $15 billion, and they're all Walton. So they have $60 billion in wealth. Bill Gates, where is he? He's got a paltry $48 billion. Then Warren Buffett, then Paul Allen from Microsoft, then Walton. And these guys, rather than let people organize and get a decent union wage, they'll close the store. They shouldn't have their money. They shouldn't have it. They didn't earn it. And that's why there should be like taxes of 90% once you get over a few million. Michael Dell with the computers, friend of Bush, $14 billion. And Lawrence Ellison from, where is he from? Oracle, $13 billion, down a little. Bill would give Bush $50 billion for more of his wars. And where, I don't know where this is, somewhere in here, though, that this war in Iraq could cost anywhere between $300 billion and $700 billion. And we're paying for it. The only place the government gets the money is from the taxpayers, and he's cutting taxes for his buddies, the ultra-wealthy, so we're paying it. We're paying it, all right? I still don't see next, so I will go, who's ever been waiting the longest. Peter Werby here with you, 313-298-WRIF, this is Night Call Show, and here's Robert in South Lyon. Hey, Robert, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Peter. Three quick things.
Sure.
First off, the BBC series you mentioned, you don't have to live in Europe to get that. You can go to bbc.co.uk/radio, and you can listen to that over the Internet.
No, that's good. By the way, we're talking about this is where the Bush said that God speaks directly to him, calls him by his first name. Why wouldn't he call him Mr. Bush? Well, I guess if you're God, you don't refer. You're like God and everyone else is George or Peter, right, or Robert. Go ahead, Robert.
Also, the whole God thing, I believe that there is a God, although not the God that necessarily is described by Christianity and such, where, that brings it to the creationism thing, where, when all these books in the Bible were written, it was a long time ago, and we didn't have all the science that we have now, so we couldn't understand everything about cells and DNA. So it's created like a fable or a myth where it's explaining something that we can't comprehend at that time.
Right.
And then even after that, it's all these books that are compiled were put together by a corrupt group of people sitting at the head of the Catholic Church during the Roman Empire, which then controls even more of what emerged to be the end of what we now call Christianity. So that then brings us.
You had a third thing? Well, maybe not. All right, Robert, thanks for calling in from South Lyon. Here is Mark from Westland. Mark, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Peter.
Hi.
Oh, long time listener, first time caller.
Welcome.
This is a biggie. I hear I tune in TV every once in a while, and the right wing is saying how the Constitution says that the separation of church and state is in the Constitution, and that that it protects religion.
Well, no, that it's what I said earlier. It says that Congress shall make no law establishing religion nor the practice thereof. I mean,
well, no, that's what they're pushing now. They're saying how it protects religion so that you can worship religion. You know, the states passed that, like, back, you know, in the Constitution. It's like they're just like it's a spin.
Well, it is. Yeah, yeah. Somebody, maybe we can get somebody to do this. Since I had it in my brain, but it slipped out, someone give us the exact language of the First Amendment there. Yeah, I mean, they're all about spin. I don't even know what's going on. I think when a country loses its way, and we see from the polls that that 66% of us think that the country is not headed in the right direction, I don't think it's headed in any direction except maybe downward, unfortunately. People often look to religious explanations.
I've seen a billboard the other day on Ford Road that says, "I want God in my classroom," and that's the first time I've seen that. That is like unacceptable. I mean, I believe in God. I do, but it's like it don't need to be in school. It doesn't.
No, we've gotten along all right without it. Hey, I want God in the studio right here. Where is he?
Looks what happened in Hamtramck, how they passed a law to have all that Muslim stuff over the airwaves to come and preach. I mean, they voted on it. There's no voting. It's separation of church and state. I don't understand how they got away with that.
Yeah, well, what it needs is someone taking that on. I mean, I'd be furious if I was hearing this four times a day.
Oh, it's insane. I am totally shocked. I mean, it just the country is just like just going downhill. They're letting these people get away with that.
Yeah, it is. They are, rather. Right. All right. Thank you very much. Here, this is something, by the way, that you'll hear in about a half an hour here on the Night Call Show. And it's contained in this email from, I don't know, really know how to pronounce the person's name, Autry, A-E-T-R-E. About evolution in school. Just want to tell you my public high school's policy on evolution versus creationism and see what you thought of us. They taught us evolution, but did so only as a theory. Now, you know, everything, wait a minute, which it is, strictly speaking, within science, theories are, I can't even construct this well enough to get it across. It's not a theory like, I think, maybe, that it was Mr. Mustard with the poker in the game room. It wasn't like that. Theories like, it just had the 100th anniversary of the theory of, what's it called? Einstein's theory of, you know, my brain, I got too much stuffed into it. Sometimes I can't even think of the most simple things. Well, you know what that is. all right. MC squared. All right, you know what I'm talking about. Everything's a theory. Quantum mechanics is a theory, but it's an established theory. What you have to have it based on something. Creationism isn't based on anything. There's nothing that was brought together. It's people's religious belief. So it's not only a theory. It is an operational idea that is the foundation of the biological sciences. Why can't I think of that? That's disturbing to me. Maybe, you know, say, when did the mind begin to... Maybe I could mark it today. The test question would be, word, according to Darwin, did humans evolve from apes? Yeah, well, they had common... no, is the answer to that. They had common ancestors. But at the same time, the teacher made it clear to us that in order to pass the course, we didn't necessarily have to believe what we were taught. For example, we never saw the question, did humans evolve from apes? All right. As for creation theory, our biology teacher went over it briefly, but pointed out that there were so many, now this is good, but there were so many religions with so many different theories about creation, of which the Judeo-Christian answer is only one, that's very good, that it would be impossible to give all views a fair shake in class. You know, that's interesting. because there is this universalization of Christian, Judeo-Christian views. Well, you can go to any number of other places in the world, and people have creation stories or creation myths or whatever you want to call them, or religious explanations for creation, and they're all over the board. There's probably hundreds of them if you start talking about smaller cultures. And some of them are, you know, don't leave us as people that are inherently marked by sin. Right? So maybe there are even better explanations, but this is interesting. Man, I was all over the board with this, but this is very important that one realize that a theory does not mean an unsubstantiated, weak idea or supposition. The operational theories of science, and I don't want to be this absolutist because things get transcended, and often the ideas come from outside of the establishment. I know that. But let's move on. Let's see. Here is Pat in Roseville. Pat, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How you doing, buddy?
Doing good.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome again.
You know what? I wanted. You were talking about the religion thing, and it was pretty deep. And I graduated from a religious high school, and I just want you and your listeners to really understand. You were just saying just before you came on the phone with me about how they don't necessarily teach you how to believe, but just to maybe have something there. And I just got to tell you, man, I really never realized what I was actually being taught until it took my brother actually to pass away before I figured it out.
Huh. Well,
you know, and you know what?
Pardon me.
I don't care what religion you have. All right, but whatever it is, if you have something that you can relate to your loved ones, to going to somewhere else, if that's actually what they have to deal with, God forbid. I'll tell you what, I was like a rebellious, I was a rebellious teenager.
Sure.
You know, in a Catholic high school.
A lot of them. Some of the biggest rebels have come out of the of Catholic schools. In fact, oftentimes people say, gee, we wouldn't have so much disobedience and rebellion if we had religion in the schools. But all of the rebels of the 1960s went to school like in the late 50s and early 60s, and that's when they said the Lord's Prayer, and you know, they taught religion courses and what have you. So I don't think that it doesn't exactly still rebellion.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of the way I look at it, the way I handled it, and that's all I can tell you is when my brother passed away, I finally realized what a religion is all about.
Well, yeah. Sometimes...
It's like that ultimate being somewhere else that you really need to be at if things just don't work out for you here.
Well, it is often comforting, and that's oftentimes its function in people's lives. But either you believe or you don't. All right, thank you, Pat. Appreciate it. I can't believe this. That I was trying to think of Einstein's theory, and you know, sometimes it's like on the tip of your tongue. It was nowhere near the tip of my tongue. I want to open this because the subject of this is what it was, Einstein's theory of, it already says it, relativity. Relativity. The theory of relativity. Why couldn't I think of that? We'll be right back. I'll think about why I couldn't think of it.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Centerfold Lounge, Detroit's sexiest adult entertainment club, is celebrating their 20th anniversary. That's 20 years of hot ladies, rock and roll, and fun. Come celebrate with 20th anniversary specials, a complimentary buffet, buckets of beer for $20, and two for $20 dances. Take pleasure in great giveaways as you dance to the beats of the house DJ. Centerfold, with the greatest
Vegas, ladies, music, and light show. Bachelor and bachelorette parties are always welcome. NFL Sunday, Centerfolds opens at noon with great food, including pizza and wings, dollar drafts, and $3 bottles. Get there early to catch the game on the big screens. Centerfold Lounge opens 7 days a week at 2 p.m. on John R. One Block South of 8 Mile Road. Call 313-892-7333 for more details. Centerfold Lounge, 20th anniversary and NFL action. Football, buffets, hot ladies, rock and roll, and big specials.
Center of attraction.
Every successful career has a beginning. Have you started yours yet? Turbocharge your opportunities by calling ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-903-1919. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. If you have an interest in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, they teach skills that many employers look for. Most programs provide a hands-on education and can help you build your knowledge base and technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919. 1-800-903-1919.
Divorce, custody, support. Three words that tell a man you have a serious problem. You can try to solve your problem by ignoring it, by calling some new lawyers who claim to suddenly be into men's rights, or by choosing a lawyer with the flip of a coin. Or you can tackle your problem with the experienced professionals at ADAM, the American Divorce Association for Men. You can call ADAM at 248-356-ADAM and they'll answer your questions by phone at no charge. ADAM has been successfully representing white-collar professionals, business owners, doctors, blue-collar workers, and men just like you for over a decade. With ADAM, you get the advantages of a large law firm, but receive the attention and dedication of one experienced attorney who will handle your case from beginning to end. Because of its many years of experience, ADAM can design a strategy to help you protect your home, your property, your children, and your future. And remember, while others may claim to be the so-called new answer in men's rights, ADAM, through dedication, knowledge, and experience, keeps proving they're the right answer when it comes to protecting men in divorce. Call ADAM today at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
Hi, I'm Greg Bonner, and I'm the new owner of Tri-County Mattress Factory in Westland, Michigan, where we'll be anyone's deal. Recently, Tri-County Mattress asked Riff to help get our message out to the public that we're under new ownership and ready to give you quality bedding at fantastic prices. We've had great success using Riff as an advertising vehicle, and Drew's 10-second live reads have really helped us kick business into overdrive. I just can't say enough from Stacy Latona, my account rep, to the production department that just nails my message. Riff is just a great team to be a part of.
Hi, I'm Stacy Latona from WRIF Sales. Riff doesn't just rock, Riff works for your business. Call me at 248-591-6831.
Sweetest Day is Saturday, October 15th. Lover's Lane will help you make this sweetest day the most memorable ever. Let your passion be known to the one you love with a romantic gift from Lover's Lane. Entice your lover with sensuous lingerie, playful games, soothing oils, and intimate toys. Make this sweetest day one to remember by taking a stroll down Lover's Lane.
Lover's Lane is also the official Halloween headquarters. We have the largest selection of couples and adult-sized costumes anywhere. So, be what you want to be. From storybook characters to a pirate beauty. Be a heavenly angel or a red-hot devil. A gangster girl or a bounty-hunting babe. Lover's Lane with over 160 new Halloween costumes. For the best selection, shop early. Lover's Lane, 12 Metro Detroit locations, including our newest superstores in Royal Oak and Redford. Or visit us online. Online at loverslane.com and be what you want to be.
This sweetest day, shop Lover's Lane for intimate fashions and gifts of passion. Visit Lover's Lane today or shop online at loverslane.com, the ultimate store for couples.
Hey, fella, you got a funny worn spot on your jeans pocket.
Too much plastic in the old wallet.
Looks painful.
It is.
Well, let me show you what it's about to feel like. Hey, did you know that all of the credit card companies are currently doubling your minimum payment? And for you and a lot of homeowners, that's gonna hurt. It's time you made your house work like a dog for you. Call 888-229-7699 and wipe out those credit card balances with a low-rate loan from American Equity Mortgage. That's 888-229-7699.
American Equity Mortgage.
$6.99. Now let me show you.
No more demonstrations, please.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome to our final segment, the Drew and Mike Show, mornings here on WRIF. I don't know if I'm giving away any secrets, but Drew just called and asked for a wake-up call in about 3 hours. Man, every once in a while, I haven't done mornings in a long time, but you got to be here like at 5:30. I'd go to bed at like 9 p.m. Everything's back to normal, it looks like, at least with the police in New Orleans. They were beating the crap out of some 64-year-old drunk guy, and I guess they've been arrested. And also they assaulted an Associated Press television news producer as well. So, as I said, things look like they're back to normal. Let's see, here's John in Ann Arbor. John, hi, it's Peter Werby, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter, how are you doing?
Doing good.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to talk about a couple things that you were talking about earlier. One thing with the number of scientists who believe in creationism versus the number of scientists who know the truth, as it would be. There's a great story on NPR about a month or two ago, and like NPR does every other story, they laid it out, and they detailed it very well. And I can't remember the exact numbers, but there's only about basically a few hundred scientists that will support creationism or endorse it or do whatever, you know, whatever other cronyistic thing that you would have to do to creationism if you were a scientist.
As opposed to hundreds of thousands of people that accept the theories of Darwin as the basis for the biological science.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I wanted to talk about that, and then real quickly about the about Bush being finally understood in the media for what he is, or however it is. I think that we have to always understand that the media is not just one opinion. I mean, you have Fox News on one side, CNN somewhere in the middle, you got Al Jazeera somewhere in there. I mean, who exactly is the media? And I think, to be fair, an accurate look would, in my opinion, would be that everybody gave Bush a free ride until, I would say, the war on Iraq started getting really bad. And
yeah,
then certain, in my opinion, certain media outlets finally started giving him the analyzation and the criticism that he deserved. But I just think it's more, it's a lot more colorful, it's a lot less black and white. And when we make it, we as liberals or libertarians or whatever we are, when we make it just as black and white as the Republicans try to do, then we kind of fall, into their trap. And we have to realize, as the smarter party, as the party that makes more sense, that it's a lot more dynamic and complicated, and we have to give it the credit that it deserves.
Well, yeah, I mean, they actually, they being the right wing, and the Republicans, they can usually lay out their deal in these slogans, and that essentially, you know, are kind of thoughtless in the sense of not having much thought behind them. Whereas, yeah, I mean, people that look at the world understand the complexities, the contradictions inherent in almost everything. And these people are true believers. So, as I said earlier, you never hear any fundamental criticism of Bush. I mean, actually, he's so bad that you're even getting a little of that now from the right, that are concerned about the nation being driven into debt, about the absolute ludicrousy of nominating this Harriet Myers as a Supreme Court justice, who, you know, is Bush's absolute crony, and on and on. So you get a little bit of criticism, but mainly they're true believers that everything is black and white. And that's, I started off the show way, way back. I don't even know if I can still find it. Yeah, here, Margaret writes in, "I hope you burn in hell, you effing traitor." And that's, I mean, here I'm saying the views now. I mean, she could have said that like 2 or 3 years ago when maybe the polls showed the reverse. But now 66% of the American people think we're heading in the wrong direction. 62% of the people oppose the war in Iraq. So maybe I should call her an effing traitor.
Well, that's my point, is that we can't fall in the same trap that they do.
And I agree.
The reason that we're so divided right now is because liberals and Republicans who don't think about it as much as they should, they fall into the same traps, the blame game and the, well, I heard on the news this and I heard on the news that. And there's a lot of different news, and what we need to do is just start. The thing that the liberals really want is science to be, our society to be based on what we know about the world, about science and about everything else, and what makes sense. And so why don't we start with that? Why don't we start with a knowledge base and stop bashing each other and just start figuring out what the facts are and get the information out there? Because I know that based on the information, we are right. But we're never going to win this battle if we don't play a smarter game.
Well, I think the playing a smarter game is part of it. I think what those elements are, probably we should keep debating. All right, John, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's go to another John. He's in Sterling Heights. Hi, John. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
A lot of folks like that tonight. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm back on a religious topic here.
Sure.
I've been worshiping God for all my life, and now all of a sudden it's kind of looking pointless to me, because just recently I lost my full-time job as a cook, lost my home, lost everything.
Jesus. Actually, what a weird thing to say, but yeah, that's terrible.
I'm living in my ex-wife's car right now, because I have nowhere else to go.
Well, someone was asking me if I read the Bible. I said I don't read it. I mean, I certainly know I've read passages, but
yeah,
someone would say, what about the story of Job? Remember that just for this little game with the devil, God trashes Job's life to test him. Will he be his faithful servant no matter what he does to him? And he just starts doing more and more horrible things. So a religious explanation would be you're being tested, John.
Okay.
I don't say that.
It's one hell of a test, though.
What?
As I said, it's one heck of a test, because it's becoming really cold outside. I'm living in a car, and I go from a full-time job, full-time house, everything, and end up like this. Is it all just a test, or am
no? It's not. It's not a test. It's the way that that the average people in this country aren't paramount in terms of what the constituted government wants to care for. In other words, I was reading earlier about all these people at Delphi. I mean, who are making probably $20 an hour, great benefits, great retirements, and they're just going to be booted. And as long as, and I'm not, I don't say this critically, but as long as we don't fight back, they're fighting class warfare. They're fighting all these corporations are fighting old-fashioned 19th century class warfare. But in the 19th century, that the power of working people was so immense that in order to keep their class rule intact, the corporations had to call out the National Guard, the cops, Pinkerton detectives and what have you. Now, unfortunately, we don't fight back at all. They've declared class war, and we essentially, as working people, have surrendered. I'm not blaming it on you. You might say to me, what the hell do I do? Okay, I'm ready to fight back. I'm ready to be a captain in class war against the greedy corporation. What do I do tomorrow? Well, I don't have anything for you to do, and I'm not the commandante in any regard. But what has to really be created, because, John, there are so many people like you and an increasing number of people, that if we don't organize in the way that everybody from the revolutionaries of 1776 through the abolitionists and the unions and the women's suffragettes and all of that have done over the generations, we're just going to keep getting screwed and screwed more and more. Because what happens is these rulers, they look at us and they say, okay, we're going to screw them a little more. Let's see what they do. Oh, they haven't done anything. All right, let's do a little more. Ooh, they still haven't reacted. And when, it's like they did. They drove the price of gas up to $3.50 and then backed it off when people started to complain a little. Well, we got to do more than complain. And I'm not sure. I mean, someone said, okay, what do we do? I mean, how about some big ideas, Pete? You got some, you know, they used to say, if you're so smart, how come you're not rich? These things are organic, and things are going for so many people to hell in a handbasket that that things are going to be things are going to happen, I'm sure. And I know that doesn't do you any good tonight or tomorrow when it gets colder and colder.
Yeah. Is our economy that screwed up that I've put in between 75 and 100 applications in the last 2 weeks and I have not received a call back?
I'd say it is in Michigan particularly, but it's and trying to find a good job at particularly at industrial levels is pretty hard.
I'm not even looking for a good job. I'm looking for a job. I've put in so many applications that I don't even want the job that it's pitiful because I can't even get a – I can't even go find a $7 an hour job right now because nobody's hiring because the economy is so bad.
Yeah. Well, I don't have any good ideas, unfortunately. I know what's wrong. A lot of us do. But how to fix it, because these folks have such a grip on our throats that it's that's pretty hard. But, there was a guy, I just saw a documentary about him, sang a song called The Times They Are A-Changin'. That's what we got to look for. Best of luck, John. Let me know. In fact, feel free to call back and tell us what happens even on a weekly basis. I'm curious.
Okay.
All right, thanks, and I really mean good luck. Speaking about prices, Nathan writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I can't understand why we're still paying over $2.75 a gallon for regular unleaded gas. Actually, I just saw my corner. I think it's down to $2.60. Whoa. The wholesale cost generally drops every day, now about $1 a gallon less than the price of the pump. This, to me, does not make any sense. Between this and the quarterly news report saying that the oil companies are making record profits, it makes me sick. Yeah, we're being looted, folks. That's about what is happening. Bob from Detroit, welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about British Member of Parliament Michael Meacher's remarks about state terrorism and also William Rodriguez, who's connected with 9/11. But I want to ask you, have you mentioned worldcan'twait.org's campaign to be kicked off here on November 2nd? I mean, it's appropriate for the guy who just called in. They want a sustained effort to get rid of Bush before the elections which may, in fact, never occur if we allow him to stay in there.
Well, I certainly think that's true.
Have you mentioned that organization?
I have it. Actually, the only thing I mentioned about it was this call for a general strike, essentially, on November 2nd. Probably going to be pretty difficult to carry off. I mean, if it's a start, I'm all for it. You know, I just looked at the clock. I have to do these commercials before 1 a.m., so I've got to say thank you for being our last caller. Thank you, Bob. Call back, and we can talk about it next week because it's a bit before November 2nd. But I think it's called the worldcan'twait.org, and it's going to have events here in Detroit. All right, thanks for listening and thanks for calling. Now, stay tuned, and I'll have an interview with the head of the National Center for Science Education, which will talk about teaching evolution, something we talked about all this hour. All right, and we'll talk live next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Big hair and short vinyl skirts, lipstick and hairspray, and great rock and roll. The 80s come alive this Wednesday night at Wild Woody's in Roseville. Join the Doc of Rock, Doug Podell, from 101 WRIF for Wild Woody's Going for the Glam Live Rock Series with very special guests Joe Grady and dollar bottles of beer all night long. Check out the hot Wild Woody's girls, high-styled in their 80s best. Ladies and anyone dressed up in 80s chic, you can get in free all night and grab bottles of beer for just $1 all night long. Come on out to Wild Woody's and get ready to party as you get up close and personal with the Motor City's own Joe Grady. Knock back ice-cold dollar bottles of beer. They're on special all night at Wild Woody's. This is Metro Detroit's premier Wednesday night party with special guests Joe Grady. And don't forget dollar bottles of beer all night long. Come on out and check it out for yourself this Wednesday night with the Doc, Doug Podell, and 101 The Riff. Wild Woody's on Gratiot, just minutes from 696 or I-94 in downtown Roseville.
Wild Woody's.
Football is back. And the Pantheon Club in Dearborn knows that you want great entertainment with beautiful girls, great drink specials, and lots of football. Come to the Pantheon for Monday Night Football and watch the game on one of five big screen TVs. Enjoy $15 buckets of beer and touchdown shot specials. Your paid admission enters you to win a DVD player or a 27-inch color TV.
As always, the Pantheon is the place to be on Saturdays from 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. for college football with 75-cent beers and lots of girls. The Pantheon Club is open Mondays through Saturdays from 11 a.m. till 2 a.m. and Sundays from 7 p.m. till 2 a.m. with $1 beer specials Monday through Fridays till 7 p.m. every weekday. Enjoy the lowest beer prices, cover, and valet around at the Pantheon Club. And credit card customers now get in free. The Pantheon Club is located at the corner of Michigan Avenue in Oakman. To avoid construction, exit the Southfield Freeway at Ford Road and turn right on Oakman Avenue to Michigan Avenue. It's right on the corner.
Remember, football, beautiful women, and great drink specials are all waiting for you at the Pantheon Club in Dearborn.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual when he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program then helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get how to turn your child's attitude around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.
Want to go for a ride? After months of construction, the party is heating up, announcing the grand reopening of the completely renovated Crazy Horse. Step inside the newly remodeled club and you'll realize you're now standing in the hottest adult entertainment club in Detroit. State-of-the-art sound, staging, and lighting. Newly expanded kitchen and the most beautiful entertainers anywhere. And this is just the beginning of what's waiting for you at the all-new Crazy Horse. Catch all your favorite sporting action on the Crazy Horse's 8 plasma screens and enjoy an extensive menu including steaks, prime rib, lamb chops, and the best ribs in town. Plus, the Crazy Horse offers complimentary transportation to all the games. Crazy Horse, where there's never a cover charge for card-carrying union members. Conveniently located 1 minute off I-94 on Michigan Avenue. Call 313-581-7400. The Crazy Horse, the ride of your life every night of the week.
Hi, my name is Patricia Tarmina, and I've searched and searched for a health insurance plan that would be affordable for me and meet my needs. I was changing insurance companies every few months, every 6 months. Things weren't working out. And then I found Health Insurance Giant. They've been meeting my needs. They're affordable. I haven't had any problems since I went with a Health Insurance Giant. And with this one, I can choose any doctor I want.
Hi, I'm Mike Kay, the Health Insurance Giant. And Trisha's just one of many policyholders where I've been able to save over $5,000 and more.
When you call Health Insurance Giant, you're immediately transferred to a person, not a recorder. Mike gets right back with you if he's not in the office. He's fast. Mike's on the job. I've had surgeries and everything's been covered. Prescriptions, dental, eye care.
Everything was covered and she saved $5,000. Call 866-91-GIANT right now and see how much you can save right over the phone. For individuals and family, small business, and self-employed, especially if you're on COBRA, call 866-91-GIANT. Give me 2 minutes and I'll beat any medical plan right over the phone. Call 866-91-GIANT. That's 866-91-GIANT or go to Health Insurance Giant.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. All of a sudden, and I thought this had been settled years ago, in fact, maybe even 80 years ago, that evolution, Darwinism, the idea that that all the species developed from lower orders, that the Earth is millions and millions of years old, I thought that had been settled a long time ago. I know there's some people that have religious beliefs, and for them, they think it happened about 4,700 years ago, that everything just came in place, just as it is now, including fossil remains. remains and all that. And that's okay. If they want to believe that, that's okay. But suddenly, it's being thrust into the public sphere. It's being, some of these theories are demanding, I don't even call them theories. We'll talk about that with our guest in a second. This idea suddenly is demanding equal time with the longstanding, well-proven theory of evolution. Joining me, as she has before, is Eugenie C. Scott, and she is the director of the National Center for Science Education. Eugenie Scott, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Peter.
I think the last time we talked, that it was almost like, and it could have been 4 years ago, 5 years ago, that all of this stuff about trying to get creationism into the public school was sort of a dead letter. And suddenly, the forces of evolution are like on the defensive, or is my perception incorrect?
I think it's partly correct because there certainly has been a new front opened up in the war on evolution. The traditional young earth creationists, the ones who believe that Noah's flood carved the Grand Canyon and the earth is only 10,000 years old and so on, they have been a constant a thorn in the side, as it were, for science education. But they lost in the courts, so they know that it's not going to be possible for them to get their views into the public schools. But arising out of that particular phoenix, shall we say, is the intelligent design movement. And this is pretty much what you're hearing today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the intelligent design is that, and I'm not sure how this is all good reasoning, that everything is so complex, all you have to do is look at the structure of a flower or see the creatures below the sea or even the human body itself and think, this had to be created by some supreme being. I mean, I don't get the leap there in logic, but that's essentially it, right? That everything is so complex that it had to have something beyond what? I don't know.
Actually, it's a little more subtle than that. And the present-day intelligent design proponents have refined the message in a way that they hope will avoid the courts. Now, if you were to go to the schools and say, we need to teach that everything is that there are things in nature that are so complex that that God has to explain them, you wouldn't get anywhere because you cannot advocate God the Creator in the American public schools because it violates the neutrality required by the First Amendment. But the intelligent design people have crafted a much more subtle message, and they don't talk so much about things like the vertebrate eye or the use of the creatures under the sea, some of the more obvious examples. They go for biochemistry and they go for cells and molecules, which people rarely understand. But their argument is that there are these molecular and cellular structures that are just too improbable and too complex to be explained by natural cause. And then they stop.
Well, I was
therefore,
gonna say,
they require an intelligent agent. Now, you tell me who you think that intelligent agent is.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's very cleverly crafted because they think they can fool the courts into believing them when they say, well, the intelligent agent doesn't have to be God; it just needs to be an intelligence. Yeah, with a skill set to create a universe, right?
Yeah. Let's. What I said in the introduction is the idea. The idea is that evolution is a theory, and a theory in popular parlance simply means it's kind of a suspicion or an idea.
A guess, a hunch,
and so is intelligent design. So why shouldn't we give all theories equal representation to our kids where we're trying to teach them?
Well, if you're talking about using the term in the street form, then we would. There are lots of theories out there. The theory that we never landed on the moon. It was just done in a Hollywood studio. But if you're talking about science class, the word theory is a term of art. And what we mean by theory is not a guess or hunch. We mean an explanation that's based on laws and facts and tested hypotheses, in fact, that explain laws and explain facts. Theories are the biggest deal in science, and gravitation, for example, is a theory in science. Evolution, the idea that living things had common ancestors, is a theory, and it's a very good one. So intelligent design, well, is it a theory? The proponents claim it is, but, you know, it's very interesting. If the basis of your position is that X, you know, the bacteria flagellum or some cell structure, X is too complicated to explain through natural cause, how can you consider that science, since what science does is explain through natural cause? So basically, the root idea of intelligent design is actually outside of science. But more to the point, intelligent design is not being used by any scientists to explain the natural world. Therefore, it doesn't have a place in the high school curriculum, which is, of course, the goal here.
Well, what, and what's wrong with the goal? I mean, what are these folks all about? I mean, they're obviously a different. There's different groups that want different things. Some people want to kick out evolution completely. Others just want to say, "Hey, can we have this other explanation just suggested along with evolution?" What's the goal?
Yeah. It depends on who you're talking to. There are a variety of different creationists out there. As I mentioned, the largest group are these traditional 6-day special creation 10,000-year-old Earth folks, and they basically would just like teachers to stop teaching evolution if they had a chance. The intelligent design people really are a subset of this larger group. They tend not to talk about age of the Earth, although some of them, in fact, are young Earth creationists. They don't talk about Noah's flood, although some of them do believe in Noah's flood, but they tend to have a very pared-down kind of creationism. It's this single idea that there's stuff out there that just can't be explained through natural cause, hence you have to explain it by an intelligence, and of course nobody's fooled. The intelligence, obviously, is God. And by having this minimalist form of creationism, they're hoping that they can bypass the courts, because it doesn't look like it's an obviously religious point of view. But of course it is, because if you actually examine their literature and look at what they are saying is that every time you see one of these incredibly complicated, as they say, irreducibly complex, in their terms, structures, that's when God has directly intervened. So you have what is in Christian theology called progressive creationism, where God intervenes over and over and over and over and over through time, rather than creating everything all at one time, which is what the six-day creationists tend to believe. So you have a different form of creationism, but the goals are the same.
Now, you know, it seems to me, it's probably a common phrase, I always hear it here, is that with that and a dollar, you can get on the bus. I mean,
the thing is, the question I always like to try to bring people back to, the real issue we're talking about here is not science and religion, it's not what should everybody know, it's not even should everybody be critical thinkers. The real issue here is what do we teach in high school science class? And the job of the high school teacher, college is different, the job of the high school teacher is to present the consensus view of science or history or any discipline, math, to young learners in a way that they can understand and build on that knowledge. Now, intelligent design has not been accepted by the professional science community. They are the first to admit that. On the other hand, they've pretty much given up trying to persuade the professional science community. It's looked at intelligent design, said, not ready for prime time, go back and work on it. But instead, they've just gone to the op-ed pages and to the school boards, and they're pushing their views outside of science.
But the
burden of proof is on them.
Well, that's what
you're
saying. If
they have a valid science, then professional scientists at the university level and professional level will pick it up, start using it, and it will trickle down into high school. But it should not be imposed by law, which is what's going on in so many places around the country.
Well, yeah, and the reason, I'm sorry, excuse me for continuing to try to interrupt you, and because I was just going to say what you got to. Where are their proofs? I mean, what is this? Maybe we could do this by having two scenarios. One, you completely get rid of evolutionary science being taught, and it's simply creationism or intelligent design is taught instead of evolutionary theory as it is now. Let's just go with that. What would be the practical result in the classroom and for the biological sciences?
Oh, well, you'd have a huge generation of miseducated students who, as soon as they hit college, would find out immediately that they'd been lied to. And because at the college level, evolution is not controversial. If you go to geology, astronomy, or biology classes, you will learn that the universe had a history, that stars have evolved, that the planets evolved, and that living things have evolved, and nobody questions that. Now, we argue a lot about the details. In biology, we argue a lot about the mechanisms of evolution and how important is natural selection versus other mechanisms. We argue about the pattern, the tree of life, but we don't argue about the weather. But that's what we're supposed to pretend to high school students when we are exhorted, as by the intelligent design people, to teach the controversy, in their phrase. There is no controversy. There's no controversy over whether evolution occurs at the college level. So those kids who were miseducated at the high school level will be up in for a real big surprise, and they're going to have a lot of remedial education before they can go on to any kind of science major or science careers. Now, I think that hurts us, because last century, the 20th century, was supposedly the century of information, and we made these huge discoveries in computers and information theory and so forth. Supposedly, the 21st century is the century of biology, where we will be expecting to make huge discoveries in medicine and agriculture and biotech and various biologically related fields. Now, the question is, who's going to be making those discoveries? They will be made. Science is a planet-wide phenomenon. It's not something you just find in the United States. And if the United States is not producing a pipeline of future PhDs to do that research, we will have to merely borrow that research and borrow that technology and pay other people for inventing the techniques and equipment and medical treatments that we are not developing here, because we do such a crummy job in science education.
Eugenie C. Scott is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. She's the director of the National Center for Science Education. Am I correct? You're at the conference of the National Association of Biology Teachers in Milwaukee.
Yes, I am.
And you were, congratulations, you were given an honorary membership award. What is their feeling is there a single feeling among these biology teachers as to this controversy?
Oh, Peter, I love having a booth at the NABT meetings, because for any science teacher meeting is wonderful to attend for me as a scientist, because science teachers are just the greatest people. They're enthusiastic, they're always learning, and they're real extroverted, great folks. But especially the NABT, the biology teacher meeting, is just wonderful for us, because these are the people who are on the front lines. These are the people who get the pressure from parents and, unfortunately, sometimes even from school administration officials. They get pressure from principals and superintendents sometimes to there's an election this year. Why don't we just skip evolution, because I don't want any trouble? And, of course, they have to cope with those kinds of pressures. Now, the biology teachers at NABT tend to be the real cream of the crop. These are the most professionally oriented ones, and the ones who care enough about their jobs to join a professional association and try to continually improve themselves. So these are the ones who really know what students need to learn, and they know that students need to learn evolution. So we get a lot of people coming by our booth saying, oh, I'm so grateful that NCSC is there, and oh, I went to your website and it's full of such good information, and oh, you don't remember me, but I called you 4 years ago and we had a problem.
Really?
So it's just great. I love these meetings.
Yeah, I should give the website, by the way, of the National Center for Science Education, and for your own personal edification. Actually, I learned, I just skimmed it, and I'm going back to it. And there'll be a link on my site, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. The National Center for Science Education site is ncseweb.org, ncseweb.org. What would be wrong, for instance, of continuing, since, as you said, and I don't think that can be contradicted, that the overwhelming consensus of the biological sciences is that that Darwin's basic explanation for the development of the species is accurate. For also, I mean, I don't know if there's any more to it. Say, some people believe that at root was intelligent design. Boom.
Well, actually, I've got a little exercise on my website, which you or any of your listeners could take a look at. Just go to the website and in the search engine type in continuum and it'll pop right up. I have a little exercise that I have suggested to high school teachers as a way of kind of defusing this issue. A lot of students walk into the classroom thinking, I have to choose. I'm either a good guy Christian creationist, or I'm a bad guy atheist evolutionist, and I don't want to make that choice. This is really tough. And, of course, this is exactly the choice that the anti-evolutionists are promoting, and it's a false choice. This little exercise that I developed, which many biology teachers or many science teachers use, tends to just illustrate the fact that it's not a dichotomy. The relationship between creation and evolution in Christian theology is a continuum, and there are a lot of intermediate positions that a student should consider just to understand that the idea that there's a dichotomous choice is just simply factually wrong. Now, I also am very clear in the instructions in this exercise that the teacher should not be advocating any position or putting any position down. It's not appropriate for a teacher to say, oh, look at these young earth creationists. Isn't that a silly view? Gee, you should be one of these down here, further down the continuum. That's inappropriate. Teachers should not be denigrating or promoting religion. But it is perfectly legal and important to talk about religion in a descriptive way so that students can learn about it. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with taking 5 or 10 minutes and just saying to students, you know, there are people who have a problem with the teaching of evolution. This is a science class, so we really can't spend a lot of time on it. But let me just illustrate to you one of the misconceptions, which is that there is a dichotomous choice between creation and evolution. 5 minutes later, you go through the little continuum. At the end of the thing, you say, okay, now we're going to talk about evolution. And teachers tell me that there's a remarkable reaction from the students. There's sort of a, oh, boy, whew, thank goodness. Gee, I thought I had to choose.
Wait. Now, I will interrupt you now. Now, I don't entirely get this. That is to say, this is sort of a deist approach?
Not at all.
Okay, you
no.
Explain it out a little more.
Okay, the creation-evolution continuum exercise is a little 5 or 10 minute exercise a teacher can do, high school teacher or college teacher for all of that, can do at the beginning of class just to help students understand that, as unfortunately many of them believe, there is not a either-or situation. You don't have to choose evolution and give up your faith. You don't have to choose faith and give up your science.
Right.
That there are intermediate positions. And the continuum actually starts out with the most extreme of the creationists, who are the flat earthers. It goes through the geocentrists, the young earth creationists, the old earth creationists, theistic evolution, and then at the bottom of the continuum, it's materialists. This is not a continuum of science.
Mm-hmm.
This is a continuum of theology, really. But again, it's a descriptive presentation to students of intermediate position, shall we say, beyond the strict, I gotta choose. And what it tends to do is get the fingers out of the ears. And the students feel much more comfortable about listening to the evidence for evolution when they know that they're not going to be forced, which is, you know, ridiculous anyway. That's not what education's all about, into choosing between their faith and what's being taught. Now, the teacher, like I say, I cannot stress too strongly, it's not the teacher's job to promote or denigrate any specific religious view, but it's perfectly legal and proper to teach about religion in the public schools, and this needs to be done, I think.
Now, religious people, they make the claim, of course, that they're the victims. I mean, I never understand this. I mean, they have tens
of hard to understand.
Yeah, tens of millions of followers, great institutions, huge...
Lots of money.
Lots of money, huge churches everywhere, and they say one of their...
Political power.
Right, an immense political power, and yet they say that people like yourself, you know, I suppose they'd even include me, are trying to drive God from the public square, which I would admit to, by the way. I don't think that religion should be in the public square. I think it should be in the churches, mosques, temples, synagogues, whatever. How would you react to that? They said, you're trying to drive God from the public square.
Well, the Constitution of the United States is a brilliant document, and the First Amendment says Congress shall make no laws regarding an establishment of religion, nor inhibiting the free exercise thereof. What that means, the establishment and free exercise clauses mean that public institutions should be religiously neutral. Again, neither promote nor denigrate. And I think that's the important relationship. I don't think it's necessary to celebrate religious views, because of course, whatever view you are celebrating is a sectarian view, especially in a pluralistic nation like the United States. Even Christianity has so many different views. The majority of Americans are Christians, but there's so many different subgroups of Christianity that whatever you would do in the public square is going to be promoting one religious sect or one religious view over others. And interestingly enough, it's the minority religions who understand this the best. some of the strongest supporters of church and state separation are some of the most devout and conservative Christians, people like Seventh-day Adventists, Mormons, who realize that in a pluralistic society, it's not their views which are going to be presented to the public. So rather than have to worship by someone else's standards, they would prefer the neutrality that I also support and apparently you support as well.
Now, James Madison, there's a famous quote of his, "The purpose of separation of church and state is to keep forever from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe with blood for centuries." And so far, we've done pretty well in this society.
Yeah, if you want to see how well societies work when a religion is part of the public square, I invite you to visit Iran, and maybe Iraq in a couple of years. I think for the state to keep its mitts off religion and for religion to keep its mitts off the state is the best way of protecting both.
Absolutely. Eugenie C. Scott, we only have a few minutes left, and we should get to something that will appeal to people on a lot of different levels, and that's the raft trip that you and others in the National Center for Science Education took. But then almost in the same area, there were these creationists paddling down the Colorado River and seeing things differently. Tell us quickly about it.
I am convinced that God has a sense of humor because the raft trip that you're talking about is described on today's New York Times front page, and it was written by a reporter who went halfway down the canyon with Tom Vail's Canyon Ministries creationist trip and then stopped off at a place called Phantom Ranch and caught our boat the next day, because our boat started, the NCSE raft trip started the day after Vail's did. So things were arranged quite well for this reporter to be able to have a creation and evolution tour of the Grand Canyon. But this is what we offer anyway. If you go down with the creationist, you only get the creationist view of the Grand Canyon. If you go down with NCSE, I present the creationist view of the canyon, and a PhD geologist presents the evolution side of the formation of the canyon, and we let you decide on your own. Of course, all the people who go with us are NCSE members, and I don't think I'm very persuasive, Peter. I haven't convinced a single one of the creationist point of view.
And there never was any kind of, you know, the two boats never met.
They were a day ahead of us, and that's far enough that we would not be likely to catch up with them. No, the Grand Canyon trip is just a fabulous experience. I mean, I cannot believe how lucky I am to have been able to do this more than once, because it is truly this sounds corny to say this, but it's almost a shrine to evolution. It is such a fantastically gorgeous place and dramatic place, and the science and the geology is just overwhelmingly profound. It just shouts the earth is ancient at you.
Yeah, so we're recording this on what are we, October 5th, but you can see there's a link to it, the story, at the National Center for Science Education website, which is ncseweb.org, and you can see that. Boy, we've got about 60 seconds left. Just real quickly, because I know there people use your website as a resource. What would they find there? And
there are two major areas that outsiders, so to speak, would be interested in. One is the press room section, which gives you the news and events, and you can sort by state to see what's going on in your state, or you can sort by year. And the other thing is the button at the top of the front page called Resources, where you will find a lot of information on the creation and evolution controversy and on evolution theory itself.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, and again, congratulations on being presented by the National Association of Biology Teachers with an honorary membership, and thanks so much for defending science.
Thank you very much for asking me. I enjoyed being on your show again.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
It's getting cold outside, but things are just starting to heat up at Walker Speakeasy. You know that Walker Speakeasy is the only place on the west side to entertain you all week long. Conveniently located at the corner of Beach Daily and Joy Roads in Dearborn Heights, just south of I-96. Featuring an awesome new menu, Walker Speakeasy is always open for lunch and dinner. Enjoy a whole lot of eye candy every Wednesday night as Detroit's loveliest ladies compete in a very special bikini contest. Thursday is Ladies Night, night featuring the sexy guest bartenders, the Untouchables. Get your rock on every weekend at Walker's as the best local and national acts take the stage. So come on and get up close and intimate with your favorite bands at Walker's every weekend. This Friday, October 7th, it's Closet Pop Junkies, and Saturday, October 8th, Detroit's favorite Blackberry Brandy. Need tickets, reservations, or just more information? Call 313-274-9645 or visit Walker's online at www.walkerspeakeasy.com. Walker's Speakeasy. Have fun or leave.
It's time to live the mortgage experts. 800-333-ROCK. 20 years in the lead. 800-333-ROCK. It's time to live.
And we want to say thank you to you, all of our clients out there. It's our 20-year anniversary, and we're excited. And right now, for folks that have credit card debt, you need to be careful. Credit card minimum payments are going to be doubling soon. So you want to consolidate that debt, and the mortgage experts can help you right now. You call today, a mortgage expert can help you consolidate that credit card debt, reduce your payments now.
It's time to live. Yeah. 800-333-ROCK.
Company Eagle Housing Lender.
It's my future. How many times have you thought that to yourself while worried about your career path and frustrated with your dead-end job? Hey, this is Screaming Scott Randall. And if there's one thing you've heard me say time and time again is how much I love what I do for a living. Talking to people around Metro Detroit every day. Playing great music. Discovering new music that I like. Hosting events. Attending concerts. What can I say? My job is nothing short of awesome. And I couldn't have achieved it without taking the first big step. Making the call to Spatch Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This isn't just another technical school. Spatch Howard gives you the tools and knowledge you need to launch a fulfilling career in radio, television, audio, or video production. And they make school almost as exciting as the actual working experience in the field. Students can graduate in as little as 8 months, and morning, afternoon, and evening classes are available to fit any schedule. Call 248-358-9000 or visit online at spatchhoward.edu. But don't wait. The deadline for registration is November 1st. The Spatch Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield, Michigan. This is where you start. It's where I started.
So I went out to lunch with those two hot chicks from accounting last week.
Oh, dude, I'm so jealous.
And we started talking about what attracts the opposite sex.
Oh, yeah, big, shiny car.
Hello? The one thing they both agreed on was a great smile.
Really?
Apparently, having healthy-looking teeth sends them a message that you take care of yourself. And if you care about yourself, then you'll care about her.
Yeah, but I always get nervous when I have to go to the dentist.
Yeah, I used to as well. Then one of the girls recommended Cherry Hill Dental Center. It's a state-of-the-art office that handles everything, including cosmetic and restorative procedures.
So maybe I should make an appointment.
Maybe. Come on.
What?
Dude, look in the mirror. When was the last time you've been to a dentist?
That's harsh.
Plus, they've got same-day scheduling most of the time. Just call Cherry Hill Dental Center. They're on Cherry Hill Road in Garden City. How easy is that? Call them at 734-427-2880 or go to their website at cherryhilldental.com.
So, a good smile is going to help me with the ladies?
It can't hurt.
Get the smile. Get the job. Get the girl. Cherry Hill Dental Center. We'll help you get it all.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. There has been another nomination, as I'm sure most people know, to fill the vacancy in the Supreme Court that is coming up, and it is Harriet Myers, the legal counsel for George W. Bush. Now, I started thinking, wow, this doesn't sound good on the face of it. Here is Bush being criticized for cronyism, that is, putting his pals in positions of importance, and here Harriet Myers, the president himself has said, she's in there because I know her, trust her, whatever. In other words, she's a crony. And I started looking around for information about this, and everywhere that I looked, and in fact, a number of them are linked on my website, David Sirota's name came up. And David Sirota is a senior editor at the magazine In These Times, which I would highly recommend. And his blog can be accessed through workingforchange.com. David Sirota, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks for having me.
You're way out in Montana now, huh?
I am, Helena, Montana.
And okay, I was out there. As I don't know if the station still broadcasts liberal radio, but I was actually a syndicated talk show host on Helena station. The call letters escape me. Hopefully, it retains its liberal quality in that red state.
I'm not so sure. I have to check. There's been so much consolidation in the industry, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, tell me, you've actually on your blog have the non-ideological case against Harriet Myers. I mean, there's a man who's elected president. One could make the argument he should be able to put onto the Supreme Court someone who reflects his views and that he thinks is the best person for the job.
Well, I think that you know, the idea that the president, it's his prerogative who he can nominate, that's certainly true in the general sense. But, you know, you don't have to look very far to realize that the framers of the Constitution did not intend for the president to abuse those prerogatives. A friend of mine sent me who's a history student, he sent me an excerpt from the Federalist Papers, number 76. The Federalist Papers, of course, were the papers written by the framers in the late 1700s that basically explained the Constitution. And Alexander Hamilton essentially addresses the question of, well, why did you allow the Senate or give the Senate power to confirm or reject the president's nominees? And basically, Hamilton goes on a big passage, basically says that the Senate's power to confirm or reject should deter a president from appointing a nominee to the court only based on their loyalty to that president. I'll give you some excerpts here. He said, the Senate's power to confirm or reject, quote, would be an excellent check upon a spirit of favoritism in the president and would tend greatly to prevent the appointment of unfit characters from prejudice, from family connections, and from personal attachment. And he goes on and he says, the president should be ashamed and afraid to bring forward candidates who had no other merit than of coming from the same state to which he particularly belonged or being in some way or other personally allied to him or possessing the necessary insignificance and pliancy to render them the obsequious instruments of his pleasure. I mean, this is essentially the framers prophesizing to us today, saying people like Harriet Myers, whose only qualification that is being stressed is her loyalty to this president, those kinds of nominees are the ones that the Senate was established to reject.
Now, on the face of it, David Sirota, that would just make sense, and everybody would probably agree that that someone who is going to adjudicate constitutional issues ought to have not only respect within the legal community, but have experience and have some separation, so that people will have confidence in the court and in the decisions it makes. And given all of the criticisms that have just come down about cronyism, why in the world, and I don't know if this is a question you can even answer, why in the world would George W. Bush nominate a crony?
Well, I think that's a very good question, and people have speculated that he is in a position of weakness or political weakness. His poll numbers are down, and that he didn't feel comfortable nominating sort of an ideological arch conservative. Well, if that's the case, then I think he made an even worse choice considering his own political weakness. You're exactly right. At a time where cronyism and the culture of corruption is in the news with Tom DeLay and the FEMA disaster after the hurricane and Bill Frist's insider trading, at the time where this is all in the news, to nominate somebody whose only qualification is their loyalty, their cronyism in regards to the president, that to me, it seems like probably the stupidest pick you could make. And I think that, you know, I think that it's going to ultimately allow Democrats, if they're smart about it, to essentially continue making the case that we now have a government whose only interest is rewarding people who are loyal to the Bush administration. And I think that the public will not respect that.
I don't know how the people that run things anywhere, actually, make decisions, but it seemed to me pretty clear when Henry Kissinger was initially appointed as the head of the September 11th commission, and then, of course, had to resign almost immediately or not accept it because of his connection to Saudi clients, that it was dilatory. That, in other words, that they did it specifically knowing that he would not be able to serve, and that delayed the findings of the commission beyond the 2004 election. Do you think there's any way that they could think this is not going to fly? That this is that they're not serious about this as a nomination and expect it to be rejected?
Well, I wouldn't put anything past Karl Rove and the folks in the White House who basically come up with these schemes. But I'm willing to take it on its face that the president, at a moment of essentially of political weakness, basically resorted. He reflexively went back to the place where he always ultimately goes, which is rewarding people who are loyal to him, regardless of whether they have qualifications or not. I mean, we see this up and down this president's career, surrounding himself essentially with people whose qualifications are loyalty rather than competence. And I think that this is a perfect example of it, even if it's only the most high-profile example of it. You know, people can rest assured that this is something that is not surprising when you look at it in the context of George Bush's entire career.
Now, what some people are making the inference that this could be another David Souter, Supreme Court Justice, another Sandra Day O'Connor, that once they're on the court, even though Bush gave all these assurances, she'll be functioning the same way in 20 years as she is today, that is, in terms of his politics, that she could very well change. She has she has a mixed history. In fact, there's not much consistency there. She seems to always be changing, and so there's fear on the far right that she could turn out to be another Sandra Day O'Connor who she'll be replacing.
Well, I think that is spin, and I think that is I don't see any evidence whatsoever really believe that. I think what that is I think in some ways an effort to soften the image, Meyer's image, and to downplay the very relevant criticism of cronyism. I mean, here's what I see. I see a nominee whose career, again, her distinguishing feature of her career is loyalty to the Republican Party and in specific to George Bush. I see that as essentially somebody who comes out of the political operative world, not the independent judicial world. And so what I see is somebody who has basically been trained to be loyal to a party being put into a lifetime appointment on the highest court in the land. And I see no evidence to say that this person isn't going to simply continue being loyal to the power brokers who got her appointment. I mean, that's really, again, the defining feature of her career. So why should we think that when you put her on the court, all of a sudden she's going to change? I mean, you can bring up Souter, but again, he is different than where this nominee comes from.
David Sirota is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. David Sirota is senior editor at In These Times magazine, and you can see his blog by going to workingforchange.com. It's part of the Working Assets phone group, which gives you phone service and then takes a percentage of what they make and turns it over to peace and social justice groups. I think that's probably of itself enough to not have Harriet Myers on the Supreme Court, but she actually is not exactly, I don't know if women can be Eagle Scouts these days, but she's not exactly an Eagle Scout. Tell us some about her corporate background in the corporation, the legal corporation that she was head of.
Sure. It hasn't been talked about very much yet, and I'm hopeful it does get talked about because I think it's a big issue. Myers was the head of Locke, Little, and Sapp. She wasn't just a partner there. She was the managing partner, which is essentially like the CEO. In 2000, a legal newsletter reported that under her leadership, her firm was forced to pay $22 million to settle a suit asserting that the newsletter said it aided a client in defrauding investors. Now, remember, this is not the law firm representing a client defrauding investors. This is the firm itself helping that client defraud investors, a firm under her leadership. The law firm essentially admitted that it knew in March of 1998 that $8 million in the company's losses hadn't been reported to investors, but the firm didn't tell regulators. And here's the other interesting part. This is not a one-shot deal. The Austin American Statesman reported in 2001 that the same law firm under Meyer's leadership was forced to pay another $8 million for a similar scheme to defraud investors, basically using the firm's accounts to move money to their shady client. So I think that's a really important piece of the puzzle that the Senate needs to look at, especially coming out of all the corporate scandals and especially with the Supreme Court increasingly dealing with more and more suits that deal with business issues. I mean, that's the thing that no one talks very much about. You know, we tend to focus these debates on social issues and divisive wedge issues. The court more and more is dealing with business issues, business regulatory issues, and I think that is why this is so relevant to her confirmation process. We have to find out, are we really going to put somebody on the court who at least at first glance seems to be completely okay with this kind of shenanigans going on?
Well, there's also technical issues, it seems to me. I mean, how can she not recuse herself from a vast variety of cases that are going to come before the Supreme Court if she's confirmed that played out in part with her as legal counsel to the president?
Right, that's a whole separate issue, and that cuts right back to the issue of cronyism. I mean, you know, how is the personal lawyer? I mean, and that's what Harriet Myers was, the personal lawyer for George W. Bush. How is she expected to rule objectively on issues that deal with George W. Bush, or the broader Bush administration? It seems to me almost impossible.
Tell us a little about this photograph. The New York Times published a photograph of Harriet Myers going over briefing papers with George W. Bush at his Crawford Ranch in August 2001. But that's exactly the memo that instructed Bush that Osama bin Laden was about to strike the United States.
Right. I've seen that photo circulating now. There's a photo of her at his ranch, and if listeners remember, there was the big memo that came out in the 9/11 commission hearing that said, I think the headline was Bin Laden determined to strike inside the United States.
Right.
And this became famous because Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, or I guess she was National Security Advisor, then had basically said, well, we had no warning that Osama bin Laden wanted to strike the continental United States. And the senators basically said, Ms. Rice, can you please read the headline of the memo that was presented to you and George W. Bush in August? And she read the headline, of course, and basically it showed that she was essentially lying straight to Congress. And so, again, this is, you know, you see how close Myers was really to the administration and all aspects of the administration. This photo shows her, you know, at the ranch at this very important time, you know, essentially counseling the president, who now is expected to go, essentially, you're right, adjudicate cases which the president has an interest in.
Some of them stemming from 2001, like prisoner rights and a number of other issues. Well, this... There seems to me that there could have been other candidates. I mean, certainly it seems odd that Bush went out of his way to assure conservatives of her authentic conservative bona fides, that they didn't have to worry that she was, in fact, a right-winger. The idea that, for instance, somebody like Bill Clinton or Jimmy Carter would have taken and nominated somebody from any office that was comparably to the left and then assured the most far-left liberal groups that, don't worry, these people are really liberals, that never would have flown. But somehow that this segment of America, which maybe represents about a third of the population, gets this incredible right of veto or affirmation over the direction of this country.
Yeah, it's definitely, it shows you how far to the right our political debate, not our country, but the political debate has really lurched, where you've got a president of the United States essentially getting down on his knees and paying fealty to essentially to some of the most extreme elements of society. So I think you're absolutely...
All right, and also, ignore that call. We're talking to David Sirota. We're talking about his home in Helena, Montana, so he's getting a call waiting there. Thank you for staying with us. This is the Peter Werbe Show. And what I was thinking, just sort of tangentially about that, like Vice President Cheney will call the Rush Limbaugh show. That would be like Al Gore calling my show. I mean, and you know, they would never want to do that. I mean, for one thing, on the other hand, Bill Clinton called Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Show, and she got in a blistering argument with him. I mean,
right.
It wasn't that kind of fealty to on the left to Clinton that there is this enormous the same sort of submission that you see on the part of the right wing. Well, what does a far right wing president like Bush? What would be appropriate? Who would be appropriate for him to nominate? I mean, there was about 50-50 split in the last two elections in terms of votes.
Well, I think I'm not a judicial expert on who is out there, who is truly independent, but rest assured, there are people out there who are independent. I mean, this president and this administration has gone out of its way to be extraordinarily polarizing. I mean, they probably wouldn't even deny it. It's like trying to deny that the sky is blue. I mean, these people have been interested in trying to appease and embolden the far right. And their strategy is pretty simple. They basically don't believe there is an American mainstream, and if they do believe there is one, they don't care. They don't care about it. They basically see their political success based on the far right electing them into office. And I think that they are governing, accordingly. And it's, I think Bill Clinton existed in a less polarized, although it was a polarized environment, but I think Clinton did see himself a little bit more, if not a lot more, as a president of the whole United States. And George Bush really sees himself as a president. While he may govern the whole United States, he only answers to the far right. And that's why I think you see up and down the line, you see, you don't only see polarizing Supreme Court justice nominations, you see polarizing policies, you see an unwillingness to work with the other side of the aisle, you see an absolute refusal to compromise. And I think, ultimately over the long term, that will be to the detriment of our society, because it makes the political debate more coarse, it makes compromising more, more difficult, it makes international cooperation more difficult, and I think it's just got a very corrosive effect on our politics.
It does. If you go to these like right wing sites, the level of absolute violence, in the sense of they actually call for violence, but there's all these T-shirts and bumper stickers and hats that they have that I eat liberal roadkill, and I mean, just all there is this almost civil warfare mentality on the right. I don't know why it's on the right. I mean, they control all the institutions.
Well, I think it has to do with the fact that the way that the political power brokers realize that they can stay in power is by creating a permanent struggle, if you will. They manufacture an enemy, a straw man, in quote-unquote liberals and the left and Democrats, and essentially they basically create this permanent enemy that they're always campaigning on, no matter the fact that they control all three branches of government, they control huge amounts of state legislative seats. There's always this foreign enemy that they're campaigning against, and I don't think it's because the power brokers really think there's a threat. I think it's because the power brokers, the Republican conservative power brokers, realize that in order to essentially keep their foot soldiers galvanized. They have to create, perpetually create, straw men for which to basically villainize.
David Sirota is my guest. We just have a few minutes left with him. He's a senior editor at the magazine In These Times, and you can find his blog at workingforchange.com. You're listening to The Peter Werbe Show. Is there, in your estimation, David, a problem also? You're a popular guy. We're going to let you get to all those other...
It's incredible. Hasn't been ringing all day.
We'll let you get to those calls in just a second. About separation of church and state, James Madison said, you were quoting the Founding Fathers earlier, he said, the purpose of separation of church and state is to keep forever from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe with blood for centuries. And now it appears, and particularly with this nomination, that increasingly that these right-wingers are trying to push religion into the public square where it doesn't belong.
Absolutely. I think that used to be an agenda probably in the late 70s and 80s that the religious right sort of tried to keep under wraps. It wasn't sort of accepted. But that today the political culture has shifted so far to the right that I don't think that politicians on the right even try to pretend like they're not trying to do exactly that. That the goal of basically fusing together government and religion is now sort of openly acknowledged by large swaths of the Republican Party and the conservative movement in this country. And I think that, again, you know, you got to go back to the Founding Fathers, the Framers, and the Constitution. That's not what this country was supposed to be about. And I think that Democrats have a very sort of important role to play here. They can be the defenders of the Constitution. That doesn't necessarily mean they have to be a-religious or in sort of against religion. I think there is a very powerful way to be people of faith, but also be defenders of the Constitution. And I think that the Republican Party, if they continue to shift to the right, they're going to essentially, ultimately, they will alienate the mainstream part of society here. And, you know, they may want to deny that there is a mainstream part of America. They may want to pretend that mainstream America is as far right as the extremists who run that party. But ultimately, they will pay a political price for pushing this country that far to the right.
David Sirota, we just got about a minute left, and you mentioned, I remember them, the Democratic Party. Where are they all in the midst of this as Republican parties collapse, as these scandals increase, as indictments loom, as they're already occurring? Do they have a strategy?
Well, I think it's quite disheartening. I think the party right now thinks it can win elections by default, drive up the Republicans' negatives, and will benefit from it. I just don't see that happening. I see that people need a reason, voters need a reason to change leadership beyond just that the current leadership are a bunch of bums. I think that, you know, if you look down the list, Democrats don't have an official position on Iraq. They don't have an official position on the energy bill and energy policy. They don't have an official position on the bankruptcy bill and bankruptcy policy. They don't have an official position on whether to basically oppose arch-conservative extremist Supreme Court nominees. Down the line, the party does not have any concrete positions. And until they have some guts, stand up and say, we do have positions, we're not going to try this split-the-difference politics where we essentially try to mimic the Republicans, until they do that, I think that the party is not necessarily going to benefit from the Republicans' missteps.
David Sirota has been my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's a senior editor at In These Times magazine. There's a link to that on my website, peterwerbe.com. And if you want to see David Sirota's Sirota blog, which has incredible information on quite a regular basis, you can go to workingforchange.com. Also look for his articles in The Nation magazine, another highly recommended publication. David, thanks for joining me on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
When my son started having behavior problems, The total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual? When he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program then helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.
Hey, fella, you got a funny worn spot on your jeans pocket.
Too much plastic in the old wallet.
Looks painful.
It is.
Well, let me show you what it's about to feel like. Hey, did you know that all of the credit card companies are currently doubling your minimum payment? And for you and a lot of homeowners, that's gonna hurt. It's time you made your house work like a dog for you. Call 888-229-7699 and wipe out those credit card balances with a low-rate loan from American Equity Mortgage. That's 888-229-7699.
The future belongs to you.
Oh, now. 888-229-7699. Now let me show you.
No more demonstrations, please.
I'm here with supermodel Rachel Hunter, talking about the Sprint PCS Fair and Flexible America Network. Rachel, it's all you.
I just love the supermodel flat-out hottie plan because there's no huge overages or any roaming or long-distance charges. I'm telling you, this network is just fabulous. It covers more people than any other wireless network. It's the perfect plan for supermodels.
Rachel?
Yeah, darling?
Actually, it's Fair and Flexible America, and it's for everybody.
Oh, really? That's brilliant.
Super.
Announcing the Sprint PCS Fair and Flexible America Network, the largest network covering more people in more places than anyone else. With no huge overages, roaming, or long-distance charges. Plans start at just $40 a month. Visit a Sprint store today.
Ends 8605. Taxes and Sprint surcharges excluded. Network voice calling area covers over 291 million people. Coverage not available everywhere. Subject to credit. Available with two-year agreement. $36 activation and $150 termination fees applied. Additional terms apply. See store for details.
Another rip lifter. Another Hemi Key winner.
Hello.
Hello.
Am I the winner?
You are.
Kick ass. That is pretty cool.
It's the Supercharged Giveaway of the Rear.
From Century Dodge, a member of the Holiday Automotive Group.
And the home of everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
The Rear.